KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
The results found that parents and the general public do not like the idea that young children would have access to explicit content on school library shelves. And there's a lot of discussion today that any attempt to remove such books from school libraries is an effort at censorship, or that you're banning books. I think that's nonsense.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Jonathan Butcher, author of the recent book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. We go in-depth later on in today's program with Jonathan about what we really agree on. First, we're joined by John J. Miller. He is director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. John, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show.
Also author of a recent essay over at wordonfire.org, and it's titled, The News is Where You Look. And that's also the first line of this essay, John. What does that mean to you in practice? How does it shape news coverage at various outlets?
It's something a friend of mine said, a fellow journalist said recently, the news is where you look. And what I loved about that line is that it captures the most powerful force in media content. In other words, story selection, how you determine what is the news, what angle you take, how you determine what's not the news. And so much of it is where you look. It's where you look for news. It's what you think is news. And one of the implications, of course, is where are you not looking for news? Or are things happening there? But this idea, the news is where you look, I think captures this important factor in terms of what our media tells us. It has implications for media bias, all kinds of things. But I like that phrase, the news is where you look.
The where is important. The who is important, too. Why is it so important? Why does it matter who is doing this looking in journalism?
We all have our blind spots, of course, and we're prone to look in certain places and not in others, and maybe we can't even see into others. But it's a reminder that there's so much subjectivity in journalism in terms of determining what is the news and who's deciding? Well, it's editors, it's writers, and they don't walk into the office or get an email every morning saying, well, here's the news of the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might, but someone's putting that together if they are. You know, the news is a series of independent judgments made by editors and producers and writers and more about what is the news. And so how do they come up with that? And it starts off with, you know, where are you looking? Let's imagine a reporter who covers Congress. And so you're on Capitol Hill and you can look for the press release that the member of the House puts out. And that's a perfectly good place to look for news. You can see the press release that a committee puts out. You can also attend the committee hearing in person and see what people say, hear what people say, observe the different actors. Maybe you wind up sitting down next to somebody who has a stake in the debate and you meet a source that way. So you're always looking around for the news, and it depends on what situations you put yourself in, how aggressive you are in terms of looking for the news. Do you just take the press release and repeat it? And sometimes you do because you can't make it to every meeting, but maybe you do go to the committee meeting. Maybe you see something that nobody else has seen because you were the one who was looking there at that moment.
This essay over at wordonfire.org suggests that curiosity is the most important quality in a journalist, which I was very happy to read because independently, I've been saying the same thing to people about our journalists here at Hillsdale for a number of years. How does curiosity lead to a better media?
I get this question all the time, Scott, of course, from students, also from parents, really from everybody. You know, what is the most important quality in a journalist? And there are lots of important qualities, but I always say curiosity. you need to be curious about the world. You want to be a person who wants to learn about the world we live in and then go tell true stories about it. That's what journalism really is. It's telling true stories about the world we live in. And so as you're looking around to figure out what is the news, it helps be a curious person, someone who asks questions and asks, you know, why is it that way? Why it used to be a different way? Why has it changed? Or why does this senator say this thing? You know, just ask questions all the time. And so you got to have a kind of curiosity wanting to ask those questions. And I say the second most important quality is humility, because you've got to recognize that you don't know everything. There are people who know a lot more than you do about really every topic, and you need to go find them when you're writing on it. So you need to be a person. You need curiosity, so you ask questions, and then humility, where you go and talk to people who know more than you do, and you go into it knowing they know more than you do, and you want to learn from them, hear what they have to say. You can question them. You don't have to believe everything they say, and probably you shouldn't. It helps to have some skepticism along with all this. But the idea of humility, which is that there are people who know a lot more than you do about what's going on behind closed doors, what's going on in a different country, why a business makes a certain decision, et cetera. Go find them. So curiosity and then humility. And finally, there's a sense of service, which is go tell a story that people want to hear.
John J. Miller is with us, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. His essay at wordonfire.org, "The News is Where You Look." You tell the story in the essay about seeing reporters collaborate on a narrative, a takeaway narrative after a debate, which makes me question, why would a journalist want to have the same story as everyone else? Why not something different?
Yeah, from rival news organizations. And the story is this. I was a number of years ago covering a Senate campaign for a national magazine. And I was writing a profile of one of the candidates, but during my travels, as I was following this candidate around, going to different events and having interviews and all that, there was a debate of the normal sort where the candidates get together and they have their little stump speeches. There's a moderator asking questions. There's some exchanges. I mean, you know, the format is a familiar thing. And in this instance, I was watching the debate, and I was in a room with fellow reporters, and we were just in the audience. We were just observers. We were not moderators. We were not participating in any way. But here we are. We're covering the debate, which is being broadcast on television, and we're in the room. And when the debate ended after, 60 minutes or whatever, the candidates left, and then the reporters from the different newspapers around the state, which had several media markets, I saw them all cluster together, and they did it right in front of me. They clustered together and talked about what is the news, what is the story here, and they had a little give and take, and they all settled on the same thing, which, because they're political reporters, it happened to be something the Republicans said that they regarded as controversial. And so this is what went out as the report in all these different newspapers in the state, because they gathered together and had this kind of hive mind moment. You know, this is herd mentality really on display. And I was astonished. And of course you see this all the time where they don't have to gather to do this kind of thing. Yeah. But here it was in front of me. They're actually doing it, and kind of linking arms to make sure that readers had the same story from all of them.
Media bias often comes from ideology, but it also can come from a place of ignorance, which is where the curiosity helps out. What are there types of stories or perspectives that tend to be overlooked as a result of that ignorance?
Yeah, there's a lot of ignorance, and ignorance is a tough word. There could also be a kind of innocence to it. I mean, I'm ignorant. Yeah. I'm ignorant of a lot of things, and this is the blind spots I mentioned. You know, if the news is where you look, you can see different things, you can observe them. But we all have blind spots. Like you're driving a car, there are blind spots, things you're not going to see. And in journalism, there are some common blind spots, I think. And one of the points I made in this piece is that religion is one of them. Mm-hmm. A lot of our so-called mainstream media organizations are just populated by people, entire newsrooms full of people who never walk inside a church. And so they don't think about faith. It just doesn't even occur to them. It is an actual blind spot. They don't think about these kinds of things. And so they don't cover them. It just isn't a part of their world. This is ignorance. And it might be willful. It might actually be, there might be some hostility involved. I'm sure all that is true, but I think a lot of it is just they don't even ever think about it. Mm-hmm. And we all have our blind spots. I have mine, but this is a common one. And so when we think about, you know, liberal media bias, a lot of it is ideological, people wanting to make certain kinds of points and having kinds of commitments that they want to exercise in their journalism, you know, often irresponsibly. Ignorance is a lot of it and can contribute to a kind of liberal media bias.
That's John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. We'll talk more about his essay in a moment. But first, an opportunity, a wonderful way to start the new year. There's a brand new Hillsdale College online course, The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin. It's part two of The History of Classical Music. Your professor, once again, Hyperion Knight. Look, classical music is beautiful. Hyperion Knight is talented and engaging. You might have heard him here on the program previously. You get to sit beside his piano as he plays excerpts from some of the greatest achievements of Western civilization and also tell us the stories of the great men who composed them. It's a rare joy and a great opportunity. This course picks up where the first course left off. Hyperion Knight has great energy, great charisma, and helps to open the enjoyment of classical music to absolutely everyone. Find it now at hillsdale.edu/new course, newcourse. It's a wonderful way to start the year. The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin, the new Hillsdale online course. Sign up today, hillsdale.edu/new course. Hillsdale.edu/new course. We continue with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College, and also author of the recent essay over at wordonfire.org, The News is Where You Look. John, you pick up on this split in polling between journalists and regular Americans about whether stories should always strive to give every side equal coverage. And perhaps you've heard talk about this, like there's no need to give the opposite side of climate change. It's settled science. There's no need to have a response. Why would journalists in these cases be more likely to say that it's not a priority to get equal coverage?
Yeah, that's amazing. There's a poll that says most Americans would like their news stories to cover the different sides of a debate. And the same poll says most journalists disagree with this. They don't think that's important. And it's exactly what you say, which is that journalists have decided that they are experts. You know, this is the opposite of humility, mm-hmm. right? They've decided that they're the experts and they don't need to give equal space to untrue things, to, you know, climate skepticism. Climate change skepticism is a perfect example of that. They view this as just beyond question, or, you know, questioning the results of an election, for instance. You know, now we're increasingly seeing in the last 5 years, you know, someone makes a claim without evidence. Mm-hmm. We hear all, you know, this is now inserted into news stories all the time. So you get this sort of, you know, journalist wanting to have quote unquote expert judgment all the time, rather than just saying this is what the person said and then, you know, presenting what evidence there is, or maybe not if there isn't any, or whatever. But there's a kind of sense among a lot of journalists, I think, that they are the experts and they can now tell us the truth because they're going to protect us from what they view as maybe harmful ideas. And I will say at a certain level, you know, we do want a kind of expertise in journalism. I mean, we all want to rely on editors and reporters and producers who exercise judgment, mm-hmm. and good judgment on what is the news. And, you know, I can't keep track of everything that's happening in the world. And I try pretty hard as the director of a journalism program. I mean, I read a lot of news every day, but I can't keep track of everything that's going on in the world. And I depend on these people in the media to make good decisions about what I should know. And then they present it and, you know, and I read some things and not others. So you do need journalists with good judgment. What you don't need are these ones who they lack humility.
Yeah.
And they say, well, there's certain things we're not even going to discuss. Or if we do discuss it, we're going to make clear that, you know, we disagree with it and think it's a horrible idea.
Talking with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College, his essay at wordonfire.org, "The News is Where You Look." We have seen one of the major newspapers in the country, the Washington Post, make some wholesale changes to the op-ed pages, but also among its reporting staff. Now, we did hear after 2016, too, media outlets trying to find and understand Trump supporters and change the tenor of coverage. That didn't really take hold. Have you seen a general shift in approach among the media?
No. I mean, there was, I think, after the 2024 election, there was another round of we need to do a better job of understanding the country. In other words, you know, a kind of honest liberal saying we don't understand what's going on out there. And you saw this after 2016 and some you know, gestures towards doing a better job of covering the rest of the country. And you know, a few efforts made in that direction, but then quickly abandoned because, you know, Trump is awful or whatever. And I think there were some moments like that post 2024 as well. But I think they've essentially reverted to form. The Washington Post, though, is an interesting case, which you mentioned, which is changing its editorial perspective, which for years has been just conventional liberalism. Basically a mouthpiece of the Democratic Party, in all the ways you would expect a liberal newspaper to be. It was just that. It was really the sort of conventional wisdom of liberal Washington was the Washington Post stance. Well, Jeff Bezos is the owner. He's not, you know, he didn't buy it last year. He's owned it for a number of years, but he finally is starting to exercise some of his control over the Washington Post and saying we need to change this and make the page a little more interesting. And we're going to commit ourselves to you know, the idea of freedom in every sense. And so they're reorienting the page a little bit. There have been some interesting staff changes there. Mm-hmm. We're just starting to see some of the changes. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out in the months ahead. There'll be some controversies about and hirings and et cetera. But, you know, the first signal of this was last fall when Bezos essentially spiked the Washington Post's endorsement of Kamala Harris. And he said, we're not going to endorse for president. And this caused a kind of, I don't know, staff revolt is too big of a term, but there's a lot of discomfort with that in the newsroom because they all wanted to endorse Kamala Harris. And Bezos was like, look, you know, when we endorse Kamala Harris, it confuses a lot of readers who think our news coverage is one-sided, even though very often it is. but he says it creates confusion among readers. And I think he's right about that. At any rate, they're making a lot of changes there. And I'm interested to see what happens next. I think it's going to be a better opinion section in the Washington Post.
John J. Miller leads the journalism program here at Hillsdale College, and the program emphasizes learning by doing. And journalism here at Hillsdale is a minor and not a major. So why is that, and how do students who are interested in journalism grow through the hands-on work they do here?
We're a liberal arts college. Small L liberal arts college, which means we think our students should major in traditional academic disciplines, major in history, in biology, in English, whatever. Focus your studies there. We also do journalism, and we do have some courses on journalism. It is a minor, and you can get a minor in journalism here. But the biggest emphasis we have within this journalism program is the hands-on learning, the fact that we have a campus newspaper, that we have a campus radio station, which, Scott, you and I are sitting in a studio at the campus radio station right now. And the way you learn journalism is by doing it. I can teach students some things in a classroom. I can tell them stuff, but ultimately you've got to go report stories, write articles, lay them out on a page, do all the production. It's like shooting free throws. I can describe to you how to shoot a free throw. You know, bend your knees and, you know, put your toes on the line and, you know, don't cross the line. You can say a lot of things about that, and that's even valuable information, but ultimately you got to go shoot a bunch of free throws. And if you shoot them, you'll get pretty good at them, or at least you have a chance of getting pretty good at them. So in journalism here, we have students work on the campus newspaper. They put out a paper every week. It's a student-run publication. We have faculty advisors. We try and train them, but they're putting out a newspaper every week. And we have a radio station, which is a spoken word format. We have hours and hours of student programming every day. And it's like the applied art of rhetoric, right? Mm-hmm. You want to learn how to communicate. Well, how about sitting in front of a microphone and sounding good for 10 minutes and having a monologue that is actually interesting? You know, how do you do that? It's harder than it sounds. And, you know, the great ones make it sound easy, but it takes practice. It takes discernment. And that's what we teach. And you learn it by doing it.
We have graduates who are entering the world of journalism. Where have they ended up over the years? And what kind of perspectives, what kind of work have they been able to accomplish in mainstream media outlets, faith-based media outlets, or elsewhere?
We have amazing alumni in journalism, and they are everywhere. They are in the White House press pool today. We have several on the Wall Street Journal editorial page. They are at National Review, the Detroit News, the Tennessean, they are all over the place, these Hillsdale alumni, and they have different kinds of interests, these different students. They go into, some go into news, some go into opinion. There is a faith element, as you mentioned. We have alumni at First Things, which mm-hmm. is a journal of religion and public life. We have alumni at the Catholic News Agency, which is a kind of wire service that provides Catholic news, and they go into all these different kinds of places. And so a lot of diversity. You know, Hillsdale has a reputation of being a conservative school, and a lot of our students are in fact conservative, but there are a lot of flavors of that, and they come in different forms and different levels of interest in things like politics and religion, and they go into all kinds of places, and they are flourishing. And one of the things I love to say to students, and one of the things I love to say is if you're interested in a career in journalism or in the media, being a professional, if you do the minor here at Hillsdale College, you will get a job, and you'll have a shot at having a great career in that field.
John J. Miller is the director of the Dow Journalism Program at Hillsdale College. You can read his essay at wordonfire.org titled "The News is Where You Look." You also now can find him writing in the Wall Street Journal in Free Expression and newsletter-focused opinion brand. You can find it at wsj.com. John, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, Jonathan Butcher joins us. He's the author of The Polarization Myth. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Classical music is one of the greatest achievements of Western civilization. It took 2,000 years, and the work of the greatest philosophical, scientific, political, and religious minds to properly tune the piano and make great music possible. But classical music can be intimidating. In Hillsdale College's new, free, online course, The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin, you'll learn how to appreciate humanity's greatest musical accomplishments. In The History of Classical Music, concert pianist and Hillsdale College Distinguished Fellow Hyperion Knight explains how music has developed and what distinguishes the greatest musical achievements of Western civilization. To enroll today and secure your spot in this completely free online course, visit hillsdale.edu/network. That's hillsdale.edu/network.
Great books, great people, great ideas. Learning about these things is critical to being a well-educated human being, and we can help with the Hillsdale Dialogues. Each week, Hillsdale College President Larry Arn joins radio veteran Hugh Hewitt to discuss topics of enduring relevance. And from time to time, they also talk about current events, but always with an eye toward more fundamental truths. And they want you to tune in to a conversation like no other. The Hillsdale Dialogues are posted every Monday on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu. Or listen via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your audio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. We're joined by Jonathan Butcher. He's the Will Skillman Fellow in Education at the Heritage Foundation, also the author of a new book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
We've heard a lot these past few months, 12 months maybe, about 80-20 issues, especially for...
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Tools like price history, dealer scorecards, and even a free VIN check so you can shop with confidence. Don't just buy a car, buy it smarter. Visit iccars.com today or download the app and find the right car at the right price. That's iseecars.com. Looking for expert insights on the cars that really matter? Then check out Carl Brower Cars on YouTube. Carl Brower has spent decades testing and analyzing vehicles from every brand at every price point. You'll find detailed reviews, the latest car news, and deep dives into what's hot and what's not in the automotive world. Whether you're shopping for your next car or just love staying on top of what's happening in the industry, Carl Brower Cars gives you straight talk, real analysis, and no fluff. Don't just read about cars. See them in action. Subscribe now to Carl Brower Cars on YouTube and join a growing community of drivers and enthusiasts who want the truth about today's vehicles. That's K-A-R-L-B-R-A-U-E-R Cars on YouTube.
Scholarships limited by race, segregated graduation ceremonies in dorms, professors labeling students as oppressors based on skin color, gender, or religion. This is DEI in action. Divisive, toxic, and un-American. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. dreamed of a nation where his children would be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. DEI turns that dream upside down. But there's hope. DEI is being rolled back. Through civil rights enforcement, federal funding cuts, and growing cultural resistance to its harm in schools, workplaces, and communities. America is strongest when united, not divided. Our universities should lead the way in bringing people together, not driving them apart. Visit campusreform.org to learn more about the fight against DEI on college campuses. Restoring Truth, Correcting Bias in Education, One Story at a Time. A series brought to you by the Leadership Institute and Radio America.
And welcome back to the Paul Parent Garden Club. Our phone number here is 339-645-0201. Again, 339-645-0201. Now, if you missed part of the show or you want to hear an old one, go to anywhere you download your podcasts, whether it be Apple or Spotify. Search the Paul Parent Garden Club, and you'll be able to find them. They're split by the hour, so a couple shows come out each week, Monday afternoon into the evening, and you'll be able to just hear what we discussed all the way back for a little over a year now with the Radio America. You can also, we have a bunch of other episodes that I have stored away that we'll be able to once we fix some of the new website and the emails and everything. Like I promised last week, one of my big things was I want to get the website back up and running to a little bit stronger and the newsletters out to you guys. So a lot of that stuff, I have some old shows saved up and we'll be able to get those eventually as well. Now, we've been talking about some perennials, right? And we talked about rosemary, an herb. We might as well talk about another herb that might be a good one to have, and that is the peppermint, right? That's a hardy perennial herb. And it can grow in New England, it can grow all over. But again, I'm going to start to tell you a little bit of details behind it. Now, there are well over 25 varieties of mint out there. But peppermint and spearmint are the most popular of all. They've been in the gardens for a long, long time. Now, spearmint, again, is a native to the Mediterranean, and it was introduced to the world by the Romans. Mint was found in Egyptian tombs that were dating back to 1000 BC. And in Japan, they've been growing many different varieties for at least 2,000 years. So mint's been around. Mint's been a long time coming. Now, mint was brought to America by the settlers, really as an additive to clean their homes and to help make them smell good, as well as cooking. It wasn't just cooking. There were multiple reasons. Another thing that was done with it, monks, when they traveled to new lands, they would actually spread the word of the Lord, and mint was planted around their new missions to use as a scent for their bath water and cooking. And finally, you know, some Greek mythology for you. Said that two strangers were walking through the countryside and were being ignored by all. An elderly couple took pity on the tired-looking travelers and invited them into their home for a good meal. They cleaned their dining table with mint leaves to freshen the table and cooked them a meal. The couple was rewarded by the strangers as their home was turned into a beautiful temple. The strangers were the gods Hermes and Zeus. From that day on, mint became the hospitality plant. Pretty cool little story, right? So, mint. It's grown from seed or by dividing established plants to make new ones. It's kind of a theme we've gone through a little bit today of dividing. I'm not going to lie, it was accidental. So, the seed-grown plants do not have the same types of quality, flavor as the same varieties grown from division. So division of your plants are more flavorable. That being said, it's not like there's no flavor to them if you've grown by seed. But it is one that they're usually better the second growing season for flavor if you plant them by seed, right? So once it's kind of died back in the fall, the plant has gone dormant, that's when you can divide these plants. But you do that in the fall months so that the next season it can grow through. Now, mint grows best in a garden with a little bit of shade. It doesn't need full sun, but it doesn't need full shade either. Now, the reason behind having some of that shade is to help it so that it's not drying out throughout the summer months, especially during the times when you can't water because of water bans. Mint tends to dry out a little bit quicker than some of the others. So if you can actually water throughout the summer, you think it can go in a sunny area, but a little bit of shade will help take that curse off of it so you're not watering as often and the plant doesn't get as dry. You know, New England, the northern part of the country where we have the cool winters, it would be okay in full sun because of the cooler climates. But I've been noticing the summers have been getting a little bit warmer and more heat happening. So maybe adding that shade would be beneficial for you. As far as soil, we want that soil to be as rich as possible. So adding anything to that soil is going to be beneficial to it. This isn't one that wants to be a sandy soil or a well-drained, heavy-drained soil. It wants to have those extra nutrients in it. So it's really kind of the opposite way of the rosemary, hence why I was saying maybe plant the rosemary in a different spot than your other herbs. You want to add something, cow manure, some sort of compost is definitely beneficial in the garden. Now, mint is something that returns every year, so it is a perennial. And, you know, it is something that can be, I'm not going to lie, become invasive. It can just go crazy. It's very aggressive. So if you're not paying attention to it, it can just take over a full area. So that's why a lot of people will divide it and pull it back. But just something to be thinking about. It might be one that you plant in a container as well, because they can be in like a 12-inch, 18-inch container and do well versus being in the garden and just kind of taking over. When they take over and they become aggressive, they lose a lot of the flavor. They lose a lot of everything that you're looking for. But it is something that can be done either way. Okay. Now, fertilization during the season, we can use the garden fertilizer from Natural Alternative. We can also use the protolizer to really give it a nice kick in the spring and then use it once a month. But the big, big thing when it comes to peppermint is water. Water is the most important thing in this plant. I mentioned earlier that it can dry out very quickly. And so when you're planting, you want to be able to hold that water a little bit more. We want to make sure it has a little bit of shade during those sunny, hot days so it doesn't dry out as quickly. Obviously, the size of the plant will determine the water will decide determine the size of the plant, but the size of the plant will then determine the quality of the flavor in the foliage. The plant really, you know, it does want to expand a bit, but we don't want it to get too big in your garden. Now, they come in a variety of a foliage, but leaves are mostly oval in shape with that blunt tip on the end. They'll grow about 1 to 2 inches long and about 1 inch wide. So complete opposite of the rosemary. They're a bigger leaf to it. Some have shiny leaves, while others have dull and almost just non-existent looks to them, right? Each plant is unique and really has its own smell. A lot of people use them in essential oils, right? The mint plants have white, lavender to lilac pink flower clusters. They're on the tip of the branches, mid to late summer. When the mint is in flower in your garden, expect to see, you know, more butterflies and bees of all types in the garden. It's really nice to add something like this to have in the home. Now, winter mint water. Excuse me, I'm going all over the place. I apologize, but watering mint is usually best to be done in the morning because it's preventing the disease problems that come along. It's also a big way to allow it to not dry out during the day in the hot part of the day, right? Because we want water in it. Now, I've mentioned this, I don't know how many times, I've lost count. But when we're watering, one of the main reasons we're watering in the morning has nothing to do with you know, watering bans or being outside of it, has everything to do with how beneficial it is for the plant. It's beneficial for the plant because think about this. If the hottest part of the day, a lot of people will say, is between 10 and 2, 10 and 4. If you were to water at, let's say, 6 p.m., 7 p.m. at night, and you water every night at that time, 24 hours from 6 p.m. is obviously 6 p.m., but the hottest part of the day is about 16 hours in. And it goes for, you know, let's call it 6-8 hours. And so the hottest part of the day is the part of the day where the plant doesn't have as much moisture. It's starting to dry out. Depending upon the heat, the wind, everything, it could dry out quickly. Whereas if you water in the morning, say you water at 6, 7, 8 a.m., hottest part of the day between 10 and 2, 10 and 4, is just at the beginning of the plant's cycle of when you've watered it. So the water is in the plant. It's holding the moisture in. It won't dry out as quickly. It will obviously still dry out because the sun, the weather is going to do that. But by doing it in the morning, it's going to help hold the moisture in the plant. Okay. It also helps prevent, you know, disease problems because it has the day to dry out. Whereas if you water at night, it can, you know, any of those diseases could be in the area. There could be, you know, moisture that is causing this disease to happen. Hence why it would happen overnight. It can't dry out. Whereas during the day, it allows that to happen. This is, also, one, keep away from the automatic watering system, your sprinkler systems. It's actually, you know, sprinkler systems are great for a lawn to keep the lawn going. But for your perennial bed shrubs, all the different planting beds, not as great. You might be better off using some soaker hoses in those areas and use the sprinklers for the lawn because the lawn needs to be sprayed over that way. So, what else is going on with the mint here? I went off on the watering tangent, but I do find that it is super important. Now, you can actually every few years divide this plant because it's going to start going into your other, you know, plants in the area. So you could plant it in an herb garden, but it might make sense to use like a bamboo barrier in between or something so the roots can't push through into the plants, other plants within it, because it is aggressive and will take over. But it is something you can dig up, give to some others as well. And we got to take a break here. We'll come back, wrap the show up, put a nice little bow on it, so stay tuned. We'll be back in a few.
This is your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Norton.
With so many of us streaming, surfing, and working online, we've become way more dependent on our Wi-Fi. And if you're sick of spotty and laggy Wi-Fi in your home, then you may need an upgrade. Tech expert Amber Mack has a suggestion.
My pick is the TP-Link Archer DE400 Wi-Fi 7 router. So this router can help to ensure that you're getting fast and secure Wi-Fi for better internet connectivity. There's nothing worse than a kid at home who's trying to do their homework and the Wi-Fi flakes out. One of the things I also love about this is that there's an app called the Tether app, and this makes managing not just your home network easy, but it also has parental control. So that means I'm able to set screen time access for individual devices in the home. So a really great all-in-one solution.
Find out more at tp-link.com.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Norton.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
What were the biggest stories of the year?
Has Donald Trump set up an economic powerhouse for the coming year? We'll answer these questions and more on Liberty Nation Radio.
Author, columnist, managing editor of LibertyNation.com, podcast host and conservative policy advocate.
We dismiss history at our peril.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
I know that hiring can be challenging. You sort through tons of resumes and you get too many so-so applicants. You're just waiting for someone to match your role perfectly. Well, now, there's a place where you can meet them fast. ZipRecruiter.
Need to hire right away. Start your search for strong candidates. The right fit awaits. Build your team.
Just head to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try it for free. And you're on your way to meeting your match. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So try it now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Meet your match on ZipRecruiter. Try it free.
Reach your destination, not the ditch, with Issy Tire Socks, the amazing new solution to keep you from slipping and sliding in snow and ice. And anyone can install them in minutes for emergency traction and quick trips in the winter. Issy is the global leader in tire socks, and it's no wonder why. Issy is an essential part of your winter emergency kit, whether you drive a car, SUV, or light truck. Give the gift of grip for safer driving. Available at Amazon, Walmart, and other major retailers. Don't get stuck. Get Issy, I-S-S-E, really, Issy.com.
Are you thinking about buying a new car? Or maybe you just want the truth about the latest models before you head to the dealership. Then you need Car Coach Reports. Lauren Fix will give you the unfiltered truth. You'll get an insider's perspective on a wide range of automotive topics in a fun, fast segment with a bit of attitude. Car Coach Reports gives you the inside track. Don't get lost in the hype. Get the facts you can trust in an easy-to-digest segment. When it comes to buying a car, she covers it all. Politics, new cars, used cars, the best practices when you're getting your car, and everything you should know about maintaining your car. Plus, what's coming up next in the automotive market and how to prepare yourself. Subscribe now to Car Coach Reports on YouTube and join thousands of drivers who rely on Lauren for honest expert advice. And if you're looking for more car reviews, Lauren also has Car Smarts on YouTube.
This season, give yourself the gift of peace of mind with Verizon Family Plus. Always know where your loved ones are. With location monitoring and alerts, you can track them using GPS or approximate network location. With parental controls, you can set safe screen time limits and easily block specific apps and websites. And we provide driving insights with post-drive reports for every family member and roadside assistance when you need it most. Get all the essential features of Family Plus for just $10 a month when you add it as a perk on your My Plan. Visit Verizon.com/family today.
60 Seconds of Service.
This 60 Seconds of Service is presented by T-Mobile. Those who serve, save with T-Mobile. Military families get exclusive savings with T-Mobile, the best mobile network in the U.S., according to Ookla Speed Test. So you can stay connected wherever you are. Visit T-Mobile.com/military-savings to learn more. Dan Jakubczyk, a Vietnam-era veteran, has spent more than a decade and a half volunteering at the Milwaukee VA alongside his wife. Week after week, he visits patients, delivering conversation, comfort, and a reassuring presence to veterans who may feel isolated or overwhelmed. His commitment to quiet, dependable service recently earned him a National Volunteer Award, recognizing not just the hours he has given, but the quality of compassion behind them. He considers it a privilege to support hospitalized veterans, saying it helps him honor those he served with decades ago. Prevagen is the number one pharmacist-recommended memory support brand. You can find Prevagen in the vitamin aisle in stores everywhere.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
What were the biggest stories of the year? Has Donald Trump set up an economic powerhouse for the coming year? We'll answer these questions and more on Liberty Nation Radio.
Author, columnist, managing editor of LibertyNation.com, podcast host and conservative policy advocate.
We dismiss history at our peril.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
Welcome back to the Paul Parent Garden Club. Our phone number here is 339-645-0201, and I'd love to hear from you. If you don't call, you can also text that phone number, and we can get your question on air that way. Now, talking a little bit about mint and how aggressive it is, I mentioned using bamboo barrier. Well, there is a quick, easy way to do it, and it's going to cost a lot less, and you might not be able to find the bamboo barrier. What you can actually do is take a 5-gallon bucket and you cut off the bottom of it, and you can actually dig the hole into the garden and place that bucket in it. Okay? You're going to leave about 3 inches of the bucket sticking up out of the soil, and then you're going to fill that bucket with soil. Basically, use the soil you dug up and put it in there. We're not looking to add a fancy soil to it. But what this is going to do, it's very important to leave that 3-inch gap there, It's going to keep it contained in that area. It's not going to go through the plastic to send out new plants around it. It's going to keep it contained. That way, the runners will stop spreading and it won't be as aggressive. And then you can just use the plant that's there. And it's going to be easier than finding some bamboo barrier, right? But this is one of the easier ways to contain it. Now, obviously, we've talked about peppermint here. Spearmint is another one out there. But there are so many flavors of mint out there now. There's pineapple, apple, chocolate. There's some orange themed. I mean, it is all over the place. And hey, when Kentucky Derby comes around, you can make a mint julep out of it. Just saying. Maybe it's an idea. It's too early to be thinking about those thoughts. Anyways. That's really wrapping it up about the mint, the peppermint, but just some ideas of some different plants to have out in the garden, and whether it be herbs or perennials, all of these are great additives for you to your garden. Now, the new year, we're already starting to think spring. We've been talking about it. I'd have to mention. This would be a good time to reach out to Natural Alternative to get some information about what you can do this spring. Now, depending upon what you are, where you are within the country, they have a cool season grass, and then they have cool season lawn program and a warm season fertilizer program. So these are ones that you can actually start to think about now. Maybe it's contacting them, going to their website at natural-alternative.com, and you choose what's right for you. They have always been and will always be one of those companies that when you call, you talk to a human. You're not hitting 17 different numbers to find somebody. You're actually talking to somebody. Funny story, about a year and a half ago, I couldn't find the number that I needed to get a hold of Karen, right? And I called the 800 number. And who picks up? Karen. And I was like, hey, it's Patrick. She's like, oh, hey. She thought I was one of the truck drivers for the company because her and I always go over text her through the cell phone. It was just one of the funnier things. I was like, wow, you do actually pick up the phone. So they're there to help you out. But this would be the time to start thinking about the lawn program that you're going to be doing this upcoming year. And they have their five-step program, their five applications, A1, A2, A3, A4, and A5. Awesome program. You can buy it in a bundle or you can buy it individual. But this would be something to be thinking about for this upcoming spring. How are you going to get started and can you have it right away? And you should want to have it early enough. So thinking spring is going to be able to get you some of those items and say, hey, maybe you don't need it for another month, but you want some information. They're there to help you out. You can always email them as well. Just click on their contact on their website. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. I appreciate everybody for listening. There's a number of new listeners out there, so welcome. We appreciate everybody. We want everybody to feel welcome in the Garden Club. Definitely call us with any questions. That phone number, 339-645-0201. You can also email us. Our email address is paulpgardenclub@gmail.com. Love to hear from you guys, put you on here so we can have some good discussions going forward. That's going to do it. Till next week, be good to each other. Get out there, actually in there, plant something. We'll talk at you guys next week. Have a great one. We'll see you.
I know that hiring can be challenging. You sort through tons of resumes and you get too many so-so applicants. You're just waiting for someone to match your role perfectly. Well, now, there's a place where you can meet them fast. ZipRecruiter.
Need to hire right away. Start your search for strong candidates. The right fit awaits. Build your team.
Just
Just head to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try it for free. And you're on your way to meeting your match. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So try it now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Meet your match on ZipRecruiter. Try it free.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Ron Taylor. The U.S. has launched another round of retaliatory strikes against the Islamic State in Syria following last month's ambush that killed 2 U.S. soldiers and 1 American civilian interpreter in the country.
Large-scale strikes conducted by the U.S. alongside partner forces occurred around 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, according to the U.S. Central Command. The strikes hit multiple Islamic State targets across Syria. Saturday strikes are part of a broader operation that is part of President Donald Trump's response to the deadly ISIS attacks that killed Sergeant Edgar Brian Torres Tovar, Sergeant William Nathaniel Howard, and Ayad Mansour Sakat, the civilian interpreter, in Palmyra last month. The Pentagon said Saturday strikes were carried out alongside partner forces without specifying which forces had taken part. Bernie Bennett, Washington.
Greenland's party leaders are saying no to President Trump.
In a statement Friday night, Greenland Prime Minister Jens Frederik Nielsen and 4 party leaders said, "We don't want to be Americans. We don't want to be Danes. We want to be Greenlanders." President Donald Trump once again said on Friday that he'd like to make a deal to acquire Greenland, a semi-autonomous region that's part of NATO ally Denmark. And he said,
I would like to make a deal, you know, the easy way, but if we don't do it the easy way, we're going to do it the hard way.
Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen has said that an American takeover of Greenland would mark the end of NATO. I'm Donna Warder.
The police chief in Portland, Oregon, says the 2 suspects shot by ICE officers this week appear to have been in a gang-related shooting last summer, that according to Portland, Oregon Police Chief Bob Day. Activists say the death toll in the nationwide protest challenging Iran's theocracy has reached at least 116 people killed. The U.S.-based Human Rights News Agency gave the new figure, saying arrests had also reached around the figure of 2,600 people that had been arrested in the incidents. You'll find news and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron Taylor.
In today's fast-paced world, professionals face endless projects, deadlines, competition. To thrive, you need mental clarity, sharp focus, and reliable memory. That's why the same company that brings you Relief Factor created ThinkFactor. ThinkFactor is designed to help you think clearer and perform better daily. It's a powerful blend of nutrients that supercharges your memory and sharpens your focus. You can stay on top of your work and outshine the competition. After a couple of weeks of taking ThinkFactor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And you know what? But the longer you take ThinkFactor, the better the results are. If you've ever felt mentally foggy or struggled to keep up with everything on your plate, well, ThinkFactor can help you reclaim your cognitive edge and thrive in your life. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, to order ThinkFactor. Call 800-4-RELIEF or visit ReliefFactor.com. Your first bottle, just $19.95. ThinkFactor. Think clearer, perform better daily.
The protests in Iran have continued despite threats from the government to crack down. Middle East expert Dr. Michael Oren believes leadership in Tehran is in deep trouble.
They may succeed in suppressing this revolt for a week or two, but the fact of the matter is the longevity of this regime is now very much in question. They have been humiliated by Israel, humiliated by the United States. They have no electricity. They have no water. Their currency, the rial, has lost 60% of its worth. Women are no longer wearing head coverings in the street. Its days are numbered.
Online videos show demonstrators protesting Friday night, even after authorities shut down the internet and cut phone lines. Bob Weir, guitarist, singer, and founding member of the Grateful Dead, has died. Weir's death was announced Saturday by a statement on his Instagram page saying he had been in cancer but succumbed to underlying lung issues. Weir joined the Grateful Dead in 1965. Bob Weir was 78. News at townhall.com. President Trump met Friday with U.S. oil company executives about doing business in Venezuela. More from White House correspondent Greg Clugston.
Less than a week after the U.S. military ousted Venezuela's leader, the president met with top oil executives at the White House, urging them to invest in that South American country.
The plan is for them to spend at least $100 billion to rebuild the capacity and the infrastructure necessary.
Given the current political uncertainty in Venezuela and its history of state asset seizures, the president promised the oil companies they will have total safety. Greg Clugston, Washington.
The president has issued a new executive order to protect Venezuelan oil revenue from judicial proceedings. The order, made public earlier today, aims to support U.S. efforts to stabilize Venezuela economically and politically. Top oil executives have warned that Venezuela's instability makes it unattractive for private investment. More on these stories at townhall.com.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
The results found that parents and the general public do not like the idea that young children would have access to explicit content on school library shelves. And there's a lot of discussion today that any attempt to remove such books from school libraries is an effort at censorship, or that you're banning books. I think that's nonsense.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Jonathan Butcher, author of the recent book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. We go in-depth later on in today's program with Jonathan about what we really agree on. First, we're joined by John J. Miller. He is director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. John, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show.
Also author of a recent essay over at wordonfire.org, and it's titled, The News is Where You Look. And that's also the first line of this essay, John. What does that mean to you in practice? How does it shape news coverage at various outlets?
It's something a friend of mine said, a fellow journalist said recently, the news is where you look. And what I loved about that line is that it captures the most powerful force in media content. In other words, story selection, how you determine what is the news, what angle you take, how you determine what's not the news. And so much of it is where you look. It's where you look for news. It's what you think is news. And one of the implications, of course, is where are you not looking for news, or are things happening there? But this idea of the news is where you look, I think, captures this important factor in terms of what our media tells us. It has implications for media bias, all kinds of things. But I like that phrase, the news is where you look.
The where is important. The who is important, too. Why is it so important? Why does it matter who is doing this looking in journalism?
We all have our blind spots, of course, and we're prone to look in certain places and not in others. And maybe we can't even see into others. But it's a reminder that there's so much subjectivity in journalism in terms of determining what is the news and who's deciding? Well, it's editors. It's writers. And they don't walk into the office or get an email every morning saying, well, here's the news of the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might, but someone's putting that together if they are. You know, the news is a series of independent judgments made by editors and producers and writers and more about what is the news. And so how do they come up with that? And it starts off with, you know, where are you looking? Let's imagine a reporter who covers Congress. And so you're on Capitol Hill and you can look for the press release that the member of the House puts out. And that's a perfectly good place to look for news. You can see the press release that a committee puts out. You can also attend the committee hearing in person and see what people say, hear what people say, observe the different actors, maybe Maybe you wind up sitting down next to somebody who has a stake in the debate and you meet a source that way. So you're always looking around for the news, and it depends on what situations you put yourself in, how aggressive you are in terms of looking for the news. Do you just take the press release and repeat it? And sometimes you do because you can't make it to every meeting, but maybe you do go to the committee meeting. Maybe you see something that nobody else has seen because you were the one who was looking there at that moment.
This essay over at wordonfire.org suggests that curiosity is the most important quality in a journalist, which I was very happy to read because independently, I've been saying the same thing to people about our journalists here at Hillsdale for a number of years. How does curiosity lead to a better media?
I get this question all the time, Scott, of course, from students, also from parents, really from everybody. You know, what is the most important quality in a journalist? And there are lots of important qualities, but I always say curiosity. You need to be curious about the world. You want to be a person who wants to learn about the world we live in and then go tell true stories about it. That's what journalism really is. It's telling true stories about the world we live in. And so as you're looking around to figure out what is the news, it helps be a curious person, someone who asks questions and asks, you know, why is it that way? How, you know, why it used to be a different way? Why has it changed? Or why does this senator say this thing, you know, just ask questions all the time. And so you gotta have a kind of curiosity wanting to ask those questions. And I say the second most important quality is humility because you've got to recognize that you don't know everything. There are people who know a lot more than you do about really every topic, and you need to go find them when you're writing on it. So you need to be a person. You need curiosity, so you ask questions, and then humility, where you go and talk to people who know more than you do, and you go into it knowing they know more than you do, and you want to learn from them, hear what they have to say. You can question them. You don't have to believe everything they say, and probably you shouldn't. It helps to have some skepticism along with all this. But the idea of humility, which is that there are people who know a lot more than you do about what's going on, behind closed doors, what's going on in a different country, why a business makes a certain decision, et cetera, go find them. So curiosity and then humility. And finally, there's a sense of service, which is go tell a story that people want to hear.
John J. Miller is with us, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. His essay at wordonfire.org, "The News is Where You Look." You tell the story in the essay about seeing reporters collaborate on a narrative, a takeaway narrative after a debate, which makes me question, why would a journalist want to have the same story as everyone else? Why not something different?
Yeah, from rival news organizations. Yeah. And the story is this. I was a number of years ago covering a Senate campaign for a national magazine. And I was writing a profile of one of the candidates, but during my travels, as I was following this candidate around, going to different events and having interviews and all that, there was a debate of the normal sort where the candidates get together and they have their little stump speeches. There's a moderator asking questions. There's some exchanges. I mean, you know, the format is a familiar thing. And in this instance, I was watching the debate, and I was in a room with fellow reporters, and we were just in the audience. We were just observers. We were not moderators. We were not participating in any way. But here we are. We're covering the debate, which is being broadcast on television, and we're in the room. And when the debate ended after, you know, 60 minutes or whatever, the candidates left, and then the reporters from the different newspapers around the state, which had several media markets, I saw them all cluster together, and they did it right in front of me. They clustered together and talked about what is the news, what is the story here, and they had a little give and take, and they all settled on the same thing, which, because they're political reporters, it happened to be something the Republicans said that they regarded as controversial. And so this is what went out as the report in all these different newspapers in the state, because they gathered together and had this kind of hive mind moment. You know, this herd mentality really on display. And I was astonished. And of course, you see this all the time where actually, you know, they don't have to gather to do this kind of thing. Yeah. But here it was in front of me. They're actually doing it and kind of linking arms to make sure that, you know, readers had the same story from all of them.
Media bias often comes from ideology, but it also can come from a place of ignorance, which is where the curiosity helps out. What kind, are there types of stories or perspectives that tend to be overlooked as a result of that ignorance?
Yeah, there's a lot of ignorance, and ignorance is a tough word. There could also be a kind of innocence to it. I mean, ignorant. Yeah. I'm ignorant of a lot of things. And this is the blind spots I mentioned. You know, if the news is where you look, you can see different things, you can observe them. But, you know, we all have blind spots. Like you're driving a car, there are blind spots, things you're not going to see. And in journalism, there are some common blind spots, I think. And one of the points I made in this piece is that religion is one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our so-called mainstream media organizations are just populated by people, entire newsrooms full of people who never walk inside a church. And so they don't think about faith. It just doesn't even occur to them. It is an actual blind spot. They don't think about these kinds of things. And so they don't cover them. It just isn't a part of their world. This is ignorance. And it might be willful. It might actually be, there might be some hostility involved. I'm sure all that is true. But I think a lot of it is just they don't even ever think about it. Mm-hmm. And we all have our blind spots. I have mine. But this is a common one. And so when we think about, you know, liberal media bias, a lot of it is ideological. People wanting to make certain kinds of points and having kinds of commitments that they want to exercise in their journalism, you know, often irresponsibly. Ignorance is a lot of it and can contribute to a kind of liberal media bias.
That's John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. We'll talk more about his essay in a moment. But first, an opportunity, a wonderful way to start the new year. There's a brand new Hillsdale College online course, The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin. It's part two of The History of Classical Music. Your professor, once again, Hyperion Knight. Look, classical music is beautiful. Hyperion Knight is talented and engaging. You might have heard him here on the program previously. You get to sit beside his piano as he plays excerpts from some of the greatest achievements of Western civilization and also tell us the stories of the great men who composed them. It's a rare joy and a great opportunity. This course picks up where the first course left off. Hyperion Knight has great energy, great charisma, and helps to open the enjoyment of classical music to absolutely everyone. Find it now at hillsdale.edu/new course. NEWCOURSE. It's a wonderful way to start the year. The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin, the new Hillsdale online course. Sign up today. hillsdale.edu/new course. hillsdale.edu/new course. We continue with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College, and also author of the recent essay over at wordonfire.org, The News is Where You Look. John, you pick up on this split in polling between journalists and regular Americans about whether stories should always strive to give every side equal coverage. And perhaps you've heard talk about this, like there's no need to give the opposite side of climate change. It's settled science. There's no need to have a response. Why would journalists in these cases be more likely to say that it's not a priority to get equal coverage?
Yeah, that's amazing. There's a poll that says most Americans would like their news stories to cover the different sides of a debate. And the same poll says most journalists disagree with this. They don't think that's important. And it's exactly what you say, which is that journalists have decided that they are experts. You know, this is the opposite of humility, mm-hmm. right? They've decided that they're the experts and they don't need to give equal space to untrue things, to, you know, climate skepticism. Climate change skepticism is a perfect example of that. They view this as just beyond question, or, you know, questioning the results of an election, for instance. You know, now we're increasingly seeing in the last 5 years, you know, someone makes a claim without evidence. Mm-hmm. We hear all, you know, this is now inserted into news stories all the time. So you get this sort of, you know, journalist wanting to have quote unquote expert judgment all the time, rather than just saying this is what the person said and then, you know, presenting what evidence there is, or maybe not if there isn't any, or whatever. But there's a kind of sense among a lot of journalists, I think, that they are the experts and they can now tell us the truth because, and they're going to protect us from what they view as maybe harmful ideas. And I will say at a certain level, you know, we do want a kind of expertise in journalism. I mean, we all want to rely on editors and reporters and producers who exercise judgment mm-hmm. and good judgment on what is the news. And, you know, I can't keep track of everything that's happening in the world. And I try pretty hard as the director of a journalism program. I mean, I read a lot of news every day, but I can't keep track of everything that's going on in the world. And I depend on these people in the media to make good decisions about what I should know. And then they present it and, you know, and I read some things and not others. So you do need journalists with good judgment. What you don't need are these ones who they lack humility.
Yeah.
And they say, well, there's certain things we're not even going to discuss. Or if we do discuss it, we're going to make clear that, you know, we disagree with it and think it's a horrible idea.
Talking with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College, his essay at wordonfire.org, The News is Where You Look. We have seen one of the major newspapers in the country, the Washington Post, make some wholesale changes to the op-ed pages, but also among its reporting staff. Now, we did hear after 2016, too, media outlets trying to find and understand Trump supporters and change the tenor of coverage. That didn't really take hold. Have you seen a general shift in approach among the media?
No. I mean, there was, I think after the 2024 election, there was another round of we need to do a better job of understanding the country. In other words, you know, a kind of honest liberal saying we don't understand what's going on out there. And you saw this after 2016 and some, you know, gestures towards doing a better job of covering the rest of the country. And you know, a few efforts made in that direction, but then quickly abandoned mm-hmm. because, you know, Trump is awful or whatever. And I think there were some moments like that post 2024 as well, but I think they've essentially reverted to form. The Washington Post, though, is an interesting case, which you mentioned, which is changing its editorial perspective, which for years has been just conventional liberalism, basically a mouthpiece of the Democratic Party in all the ways you would expect a liberal newspaper to be. It was just that. It was really the sort of conventional wisdom of liberal Washington was the Washington Post's stance. Well, Jeff Bezos is the owner. He's not, you know, he didn't buy it last year. He's owned it for a number of years, but he finally is starting to exercise some of his control over the Washington Post and saying we need to change this and make the page a little more interesting. And we're going to commit ourselves to you know, the idea of freedom in every sense. And so they're reorienting the page a little bit. There have been some interesting staff changes there. Mm-hmm. We're just starting to see some of the changes. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out in the months ahead. There'll be some controversies about departures, already have been, and hirings and et cetera. But, you know, the first signal of this was last fall when Bezos essentially spiked
right.
the Washington Post's endorsement of Kamala Harris. And he said, we're not going to endorse for president. And this caused a kind of, I don't know, staff revolt is too big of a term, but there's a lot of discomfort with that in the newsroom because they all wanted to endorse Kamala Harris. And Bezos was like, look, you know, when we endorse Kamala Harris, it confuses a lot of readers who think our news coverage is one-sided, even though very often it is. but he says it creates confusion among readers. And I think he's right about that. At any rate, they're making a lot of changes there. And I'm interested to see what happens next. I think it's going to be a better opinion section in the Washington Post.
John J. Miller leads the journalism program here at Hillsdale College, and the program emphasizes learning by doing. And journalism here at Hillsdale is a minor and not a major. So why is that, and how do students who are interested in journalism grow through the hands-on work they do here?
We're a liberal arts college. Small L liberal arts college, which means we think our students should major in traditional academic disciplines, major in history, in biology, in English, whatever. Focus your studies there. We also do journalism, and we do have some courses on journalism. It is a minor, and you can get a minor in journalism here. But the biggest emphasis we have within this journalism program is the hands-on learning, the fact that we have a campus newspaper, that we have a campus radio station, which, Scott, you and I are sitting in a studio at the campus radio station right now. And the way you learn journalism is by doing it. I can teach students some things in a classroom. I can tell them stuff, but ultimately you've got to go report stories, write articles, lay them out on a page, do all the production. It's like shooting free throws. I can describe to you how to shoot a free throw. You know, bend your knees and, you know, put your toes on the line and, you know, don't cross the line. You can say a lot of things about that, and that's even valuable information, but ultimately you gotta go shoot a bunch of free throws. And if you shoot them, you'll get pretty good at them, or at least you have a chance of getting pretty good at them. So in journalism here, we have students work on the campus newspaper. They put out a paper every week. It's a student-run publication. We have faculty advisors. We try and train them, but they're putting out a newspaper every week. And we have a radio station, which is a spoken word format. We have hours and hours of student programming every day. And it's like the applied art of rhetoric, right? Mm-hmm. You want to learn how to communicate. Well, how about sitting in front of a microphone and sounding good for 10 minutes and having a monologue that is actually interesting? You know, how do you do that? It's harder than it sounds, and you know, the great ones make it sound easy, but it takes practice, it takes discernment, and that's what we teach, and you learn it by doing it.
We have graduates who are entering the world of journalism. Where have they ended up over the years, and what kind of perspectives, what kind of work have they been able to accomplish in mainstream media outlets, faith-based media outlets, or elsewhere?
We have amazing alumni in journalism, and they are everywhere. They are in the White House press pool today. We have several on the Wall Street Journal editorial page. They are at National Review, the Detroit News, the Tennessean. They are all over the place, these Hillsdale alumni, and they have different kinds of interests, these different students. They go into, some go into news, some go into opinion. There is a faith element, as you mentioned. We have alumni at First Things, which mm-hmm. is a journal of religion and public life. We have alumni at the Catholic News Agency, which is a kind of wire service that provides Catholic news, and they go into all these different kinds of places. And so a lot of diversity. You know, Hillsdale has a reputation of being a conservative school, and a lot of our students are in fact conservative, but there are a lot of flavors of that, and they come in different forms and different levels of interest in things like politics and religion, and they go into all kinds of places, and they are flourishing. And one of the things I love to say to students, and one of the things I love to say is if you're interested in a career in journalism or in the media, being a professional, if you do the minor here at Hillsdale College, you will get a job, and you'll have a shot at having a great career in that field.
John J. Miller is the director of the Dow Journalism Program at Hillsdale College. You can read his essay at wordonfire.org titled "The News is Where You Look." You also now can find him writing in the Wall Street Journal in Free Expression and newsletter-focused opinion brand. You can find it at wsj.com. John, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, Jonathan Butcher joins us. He's the author of The Polarization Myth. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Classical music is one of the greatest achievements of Western civilization. It took 2,000 years, and the work of the greatest philosophical, scientific, political, and religious minds to properly tune the piano and make great music possible. But classical music can be intimidating. In Hillsdale College's new, free, online course, The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin, you'll learn how to appreciate humanity's greatest musical accomplishments. In The History of Classical Music, concert pianist and Hillsdale College Distinguished Fellow Hyperion Knight explains how music has developed and what distinguishes the greatest musical achievements of Western civilization. To enroll today and secure your spot in this completely free online course, visit hillsdale.edu/network. That's hillsdale.edu/network.
Great books, great people, great ideas. Learning about these things is critical to being a well-educated human being, and we can help with the Hillsdale Dialogues. Each week, Hillsdale College President Larry Arn joins radio veteran Hugh Hewitt to discuss topics of enduring relevance. And from time to time, they also talk about current events, but always with an eye toward more fundamental truths. And they want you to tune in to a conversation like no other. The Hillsdale Dialogues are posted every Monday on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu. Or listen via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your audio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. We're joined by Jonathan Butcher. He's the Will Skillman Fellow in Education at the Heritage Foundation, also the author of a new book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
We've heard a lot these past few months, 12 months maybe, about 80-20 issues, especially pertaining to President Trump. But reading the foreword and introduction, your idea goes back well before the beginning of this year of 2025, that there were these issues out there that people really agreed on but just didn't know it. What struck you as being unique about that?
Well, we are told over and over again by the mainstream media and by, quote, experts that America is polarized and that there's nothing that Americans can agree on. And they're making movies in Hollywood about a civil war and airstrikes being called, you know, on states around the U.S. from Washington, when in reality, Americans actually agree on quite a bit when it comes to the issues. When we talk about things like the use of, say, racial preferences in college admissions, or when we talk about teaching the idea of gender to young children, especially in grades K through three, these are things that Americans agree on, right? We don't want racial preferences. We want students to be judged based on their actions and behavior. We want young children to be protected from ideas that they're not ready for, right, that they're not mature enough to understand. And that was just a remarkable thing that our survey uncovered. And I felt like it needed to be written down so that Americans understood we actually really are speaking the same language culturally on a great many important issues.
And you point out that it's these experts that say we're polarized, or we see, yes, movies saying there's a civil war coming, or reports saying that we've never been farther apart. Should we trust the experts on this matter?
Well, I think when it comes to politics and even politicians, I mean, there's evidence from voting that there's some polarization still, but that doesn't mean that in the daily life that we each lead, right? Going off to work, sending our kids to school, watching the news and how we interpret the world around us. There's actually quite a bit of agreement that we don't want boys participating in girls' sports, for example. We have a majority who doesn't want boys to have access to girls' private spaces, right? I mean, these are things that Americans in our daily lives, we all actually agree on. And that matters because as we participate in community life, as we have policymakers looking to create constituencies to make very sound public policies, they can rest these ideas on this polling, right, on this perception. Now, there's no single survey that can answer every question or that is representative, right? They're a snapshot in time. But in my book, I found over and over again supporting surveys that found the same results that I did. I mean, over and over again, I found polling showing that parents don't like the idea that children would be taught that slavery is the most important thing in American history, right? It found that over and over again. Also found the idea that parents want character and virtue taught in schools, right? They want schools to be preparing young people to be the kinds of adults who live responsible lives. I mean, these are the kinds of things that we find over the years and not just in one survey.
The Polarization Myth is the new book by Jonathan Butcher. Inside there are, four chapters covering various topics, five chapters, check that. And the first one starts with DEI. And there has been some efforts under the Trump administration to eliminate DEI where possible, but it seems to have its fingers stuck very hard into universities and colleges across the country. Why are college officials going to such great lengths to defend DEI, to defend racial preferences in admissions, when, again, the polling's all over the polarization myth, would say the public doesn't agree with any of that?
Well, and it's not just academia. It's also in the business world. I mean, you have employees being forced to undergo trainings that tell them that they are guilty of some sort of collective guilt or collective oppression just based on the color of their skin. I had the chance to interview a scientist, a chemist at Chevron Phillips, who had to do a DEI training program. And, you know, he said, look, I don't understand why you're telling me that, you know, George Washington's teeth may have come from slaves. I'm trying to create plastics here, right? Out of using oil, right? I mean, mm-hmm. this is not helping me for my job. And it's also making me feel highly uncomfortable with the idea that I should think America is irreparably burdened by this idea of racial oppression. So that was a fascinating interview, and there are many, many others like it that you can find in the business sector around the country. And the same is true in higher education, perhaps even more so. I think some of the more interesting stories that I included in that chapter are from individuals who were DEI trainers themselves, their job was to conduct these programs on college campuses, and they themselves were canceled because in one case there's a community college professor in California who dared to say that a diversity of ideas is actually an important thing and lost her job because of it. So I think even those who push the DEI agenda have started to see that it's even more narrow than they once thought it was.
Something I thought is interesting, you mentioned it, and I think there's even another study or survey from University of Michigan, too, that students, even with these DEI programs on campuses, don't necessarily feel more safe, don't necessarily feel more accepted on campus. So what's the end result we get from this?
Well, they often put on their websites that they're trying to foster tolerance, or they're trying to create acceptance of people from different backgrounds. And really what they've done is they've made people highly insecure about who they are, and very divisive over protecting turf when it comes to ethnicity and race. It has not fostered a culture of civility. And as we can see over the last 2 years, really since the tragedy of October 7th, you know, we can really see that they haven't stopped anti-Semitism. I mean, mm-hmm. on campuses like Columbia and Harvard and in California, UCLA, and others, there have been, violence and unrest. Jewish students have not felt safe. They've been chased off of campus. I mean, this hasn't been prevented by DEI offices. So what was their purpose in the first place, right? When it really mattered, right? When protecting students really mattered and defending civil rights really mattered, these offices were nowhere to be seen.
The second chapter in the polarization myth is on COVID, student achievement, the reading wars. I love all the surveys, all the numbers in here. I was perhaps most surprised by seeing that 52% of parents are satisfied with K-12 education in the country. That seems high considering the number of problems we see in schools all across the country, particularly in K-12 education. Were you surprised by that number?
I was, and it is true, though, that the approval rates have been going down, especially coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic. Mm-hmm. And when you look at, there are kind of two questions here. One is, do you approve of public schooling in the United States? And I think those numbers are low and have been on a downward trend for several years. And then there's the question of, are you happy with your child's education at a local school? And parents often say yes. And so I think what we find is that parents tend to be satisfied with the school that they have chosen. And there's probably some selection bias, right, that helps to explain that, right? If you've either made the choice or if you've made some sort of commitment to where you send your child to school, you probably have a little bit of bias towards that institution. And that's something that we found across surveys as well, for many years. So to help explain this, I think what we need to see is that about 2 million kids are nowhere to be found on public school rolls coming out of the COVID pandemic. We still have kids who simply just didn't go back to school or that we can't have no record of. So that's a problem. And we also have seen public school enrollment decline by about 2.5% coming out of the pandemic. And so more and more today, parents are making choices about how and where their children learn, whether that's through a private school scholarship or homeschooling or a learning pod or something like that. It's reshaping the whole landscape. And that is truly, truly notable.
There's been recent discussion about the Mississippi miracle and the improvements in K-12 education in that state. It's also referenced inside the polarization myth. What's Mississippi doing? Is it repeatable elsewhere?
Yeah, they've really invested in improving reading instruction, especially by changing how it's taught. And, you know, there was a terrific podcast that has made the rounds in the last 5-7 years called Sold a Story that talks about how American schools had been using cueing or the whole language method of teaching reading, which is it's really a part of the progressive movement that dates back more than 100 years. And we've just found that this is really to blame for the very low reading scores, reading proficiency across the U.S. Now, today, we have across states, increasingly state lawmakers are demanding that educators use what has really become known as, quote, the science of reading. And it's not phonics only, right? It's not phonics on its own, but it does reintroduce the teaching of phonics into the classroom. And that's what had been missing, right? The cueing and whole language methods had been taught at the exclusion of phonics. And I think that that is a big change that Mississippi helped introduce. Louisiana is another state that has been doing that. And my book talks about other states where lawmakers are saying, hey, this is important now that we really change the way in which we teach reading for the next step. And the next step is to be able to teach other subjects in a rigorous way, right? Civics, history, all, you know, those subjects are really what we need to help students become participating members in society.
Jonathan Butcher with us. The book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. One of those other subjects is civics, in fact, the next chapter in the book. And I was unaware of this term until maybe a year ago when I interviewed someone about the idea of action civics and how the Obama-era Department of Education, Artie Duncan, began in inserting action civics into schools across the country. What is that concept, and why isn't it doing a good job of teaching our school children about civics?
Right. Well, it's not just what they've introduced, it's what they've removed. I think that they've removed a teaching of dates and facts and figures and information about our founding fathers, significant individuals from America's past, and they've replaced it with the encouragement that students use a issue that they are very interested in and become politically active. So lobbying a lawmaker for, you know, not using plastic bags in the grocery store, for example, or holding a walkout that is condoned by the school faculty and leadership to protest gun rights, right? These are they sort of skip the part where we teach students about why there are differing views on these topics and what actually is an appropriate way to consider, right, highly charged political topics. Let's just skip to the end. Let's just tell them how to become lobbyists and how to become activists without giving them the ability and the tools and the history, frankly, to be able to determine how to understand these difficult topics. And without that basis, without that grounding, students, you know, they're applying more emotion than they are actually thinking critically about why there is such a debate on these questions.
See, Americans want, the polling says Americans want civics to work for the betterment of their children. What kind of things do parents tell us they want to see inside civics class?
Well, it's interesting. When you look back at civics textbooks from 100 years ago, I think it's not uncommon. It's actually quite common, I found, in civics books to find ideas of responsibility, of virtue, of courage, of responsibility for your actions, the idea that teachers are their best lessons are their personal example, how they live their lives, right? These are the things that are at the heart of civic behavior and civic activities, right? We should be teaching young people that it matters the way they treat other people, right? It matters how they pay attention to the way they act, the way that they complete their coursework, the way that they are engaged in community life, right? It is an issue of personal responsibility that matters. And I think that's being lost today. And instead you have, as you were saying, this action civics idea that we all need to be lobbying lawmakers for some sort of pet cause. And I think that's the wrong lesson. I mean, parents want, again, our survey found in others that I've either done myself or seen, parents want virtue and character taught to young people.
Jonathan Butcher with us. His book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. There's a section, well, actually multiple sections have questions where you break it down between general public, parents of students, and then school board members. And the sex v. gender chapter, the difference is never more stark than there, I think, where the school board members, according to the poll, want graphic sexual acts in books, 36%, compared to 13% of the general population. Why are the school board members so skewed when compared to the rest of the country?
Yeah, our school board survey is not nationally representative. It's a little heavier on the Southeast, but I included those results to give people a sense of what those who are, you know, serving on district boards are thinking. And I think the comparison is instructive because these are the people who are making decisions about what is on school library shelves. And I think that the results found that parents and the general public do not like the idea that young children would have access to explicit content on school library shelves. And there's a lot of discussion today that any attempt to remove such books from school libraries is an effort at censorship, or that you are banning books. And I think that's nonsense. I mean, I think the reality is that it is the responsibility of adults to determine age-appropriate material, right? That's the job of school board members and parents and educators. And one of our survey questions found that when we asked people who should be making these decisions, the highest response was to a combination of parents and school leaders. So I don't think that the general public is saying we should remove the authority from educators to make these decisions, but at the same time, we should include parents because they do, in fact, know their children, and they do have interests in what their children are being taught and how what values are being passed on to them. So I think that this increasingly around the country, especially over the last 18 months, I would say, we have seen evidence of states that have taken steps to either include parents in the decision making about what books are used, or otherwise take material that has no place in schools off the shelves. And that's not banning it. It just means it's not age appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, in the Out of Touch Teachers Union chapter, you say, if you're not familiar with restorative justice or have yet to form an opinion, you're in good company, which is great because I've heard the phrase, but I don't fully understand what restorative justice is. Explain for our audience, and how does that tie in to the actions of teachers' unions across the country?
Especially over the last decade, there's been a lot of attention to how school discipline is handled in classrooms, whether or not students should be suspended or expelled. Those on the radical left have made the argument that there is a school-to-prison pipeline. When you suspend or expel students, that you are setting them up to wind up in jail or in prison. And what that has done is it's allowed schools to adopt policies that keep dangerous, if not just disruptive, students in classrooms, which makes it more difficult for their peers to do well in school. It also allows, you know, violent students who frankly need some sort of discipline and oversight to remain in classrooms, and it becomes a threat to their peers. Restorative justice is this idea that instead of disciplining students, you have they call it a restorative circle in some cases, where you go face to face with the person who you have wronged or who you have accused, and you somehow talk it out, have a meeting of the minds, and you resolve the situation, and then get up, shake hands, and everybody's friends again. I think it rarely works that way, and nor should it. I think if you leave out the whole discipline part mm-hmm. of the exercise, then students haven't learned anything. Restorative justice, you can trace at least part of it back to an attempt in prison populations to make restitution. The original purpose of restorative justice was to restore. If something was, you know, damaged with arson, if something was stolen, if a person was injured, the idea was that the guilty party would be a part of a restorative act to resolve what was damaged. And the way it's used in schools is simply a talk therapy that removes the discipline part. And I think that's been very, very harmful for young people.
Final question for Jonathan Butcher. His book is The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. At the end, there's a section with conclusion, recommendations, something that you spoke about earlier in the book, bring back here, is teaching the success sequence. Tell people what that is. And this is, talk about not being polarized. It seems like everyone should agree on these very simple things inside the success sequence. So what's controversial about it?
So the success sequence has been in the research literature for more than 20 years. And it's the idea from social science that if a young person finishes high school, enters college or gets a job, enters the workforce, and then gets married before having a child, they are far less likely to live in poverty as an adult. And it turns out in the research that this is true. It is true that those in their 20s, if you finished high school, got a job or entered college, and got married before you had a child, you were far less likely than your peers to live in poverty. And not just live in poverty, but actually reach middle class, according to research, especially on the millennial generation. So we should, at age-appropriate levels, be teaching young people these things, right? I mean, I think it is a simple part of the process of character formation, where you can tell young people, look, it matters if you finish high school. It matters if you do well. It matters if you, when you are finished, if you enter the workforce and are prepared to take responsibility for yourself, or if you go to college. And then when you choose to get in a relationship, if you get married before having children, you do these three things, these three parts of the success sequence, you are far less likely to find yourself in poverty. It's a way to set yourself up for success, in your adult life. And, we should be teaching young people these things. There are already in, Alabama, and a couple of other states, lawmakers have considered proposals that would do this, that would require the teaching of the success sequence to young people. And I think that this is a way in which schools can begin to move away from the DEI and identity politics that has so mired school curricula and move to something that would help prepare students to be contributing members of their communities.
Jonathan Butcher is the Will Skillman Fellow in Education at the Heritage Foundation and the author of the new book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to John J. Miller from here at Hillsdale College and Jonathan Butcher, author of The Polarization Myth. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Do you need an electrician? Call Nate with N&B Electric and Pumps. He'll take care of your needs. He's local, he's honest, and he'll beat any local competitor's price. Call Nate at 530-524-8543.
Good day. Welcome to This Week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, to provide the latest local updates.
Former supervisor Patrick Jones filed a lawsuit seeking nearly $56 million against District Attorney Stephanie Bridget, alleging she used county employees during work hours for her 2022 campaign. Jones claims that at least half of Bridget's cases were dismissed that year, causing taxpayer harm. When the county declined to pursue legal action, Jones filed independently. Bridget denies the allegations, stating an independent investigator found no wrongdoing. She maintains the District Attorney's office operations were not impacted by campaign activities and that she neither required nor authorized staff to work on her campaign during county time. In other news, the California Energy Commission denied the Fountain Wind Project proposed for Eastern Shasta County, aligning with previous rejections by the County Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors. The wind energy project would have covered approximately 2,855 acres of private leased land in the Montgomery Creek area. 2026 Board Chair Chris Kellstrom celebrated the decision as ending the state's attempt to override local governance, crediting the Pitt River Tribe and Redding Rancheria for their leadership in opposing the project. County Executive Officer David Rickert thanked the community for nearly 10 years of united opposition. Switching gears, a multi-agency undercover operation targeting prostitution resulted in 6 arrests at a local hotel. Investigators from the Sheriff's Office, District Attorney's Office, Redding Police Department, and FBI contacted 150 individuals through known prostitution websites. Those arrested include Cody Kane, Blake Glazier, Justin McCamus, and Jason Kearney for prostitution-related offenses. Russell Garnes and Laura Henningsen face additional charges for arranging to meet a minor for sex, contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and narcotics violations. All 6 suspects were booked into the county jail. On a brighter note, Santa and Mrs. Claus delivered Christmas gifts to residents at the Redding Veterans Home through the annual Adopt-A-Vet program. Community members selected wish tags from Christmas trees and purchased gifts for veterans. Resident Jack Palacios received golf shirts and stamps, expressing gratitude for community kindness and staff support. He noted that dressing well helps and feel good when family visits. Staff reported that participants lined up early to adopt veterans, with all residents receiving gifts within an hour. Every resident had presents to open, demonstrating the community's strong support. Find more local stories by Shasta Lake Town Hall at Town Hall Brief on Linktree.com. From all of us at Town Hall Brief, thanks for listening.
Hey neighbors, have you ever wondered where you can find a store that truly feels like home? Well, look no further. Grange Co-op has been community-focused since 1934, and guess what? We're not just a store. We're owned by customers just like you. Yep, that's right. It's all about community here. So why choose Grange Co-op? When you shop with us, you're not just supporting a store, you're supporting a community. Grange Co-op has what you need for your home, garden, pets, and farm. Grange Co-op, where the values of yesterday meet the needs of today.
Hi, this is Carrie Grawl. This season marks a new chapter for Organic Pilates, a rebirth of sorts in a new, larger downtown space. Alongside it, we want to introduce you to Harmony, a lifestyle boutique created as a natural extension of how we move and live with intention. We want to invite you in. Harmony and Organic Pilates, now open in downtown Reading. We're located at 1264 California Street in between Curated and Theory Coffee. We can't wait to see you.
Good day. Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, to provide the latest local updates. Chris Kellstrom will serve as the new Shasta County Board of Supervisors chair in 2026, with Corky Harmon as vice chair. Both appointments passed on 3-2 votes during Tuesday's meeting. Current chair Kevin Cry disclosed he has been diagnosed with a tumor and is awaiting further tests to determine if it's cancerous or benign. Cry, age 49, encouraged other men to seek medical screenings and expressed confidence in his recovery. The board also certified November's special election and voted to reconsider support for the True North Behavioral Health Campus project. In another development, Shasta County filed an appeal on December 5th challenging a Superior Court ruling that voided an intergovernmental agreement with Redding Rancheria. The court had found the agreement invalid following an April bench trial. County officials maintain the Board of Supervisors legally entered into the agreement. Redding Rancheria's Attorney General expressed strong support for the appeal, calling the agreement fair, reasonable, and beneficial for both tribal citizens and the broader community while supporting public safety and infrastructure needs. Moving to law enforcement news, a wanted felon from Corning led officers on a high-speed pursuit Thursday afternoon before abandoning his stolen Nissan pickup truck and fleeing on foot. Agustin Corona, 27, jumped into the Sacramento River attempting to escape but was arrested near Turtle Bay East open space after swimming across. His passenger, Aaliyah Hethcote, was caught along the riverbank. California Highway Patrol's helicopter assisted in locating both suspects. Officers found methamphetamine and numerous stolen identification cards inside the vehicle. Corona had outstanding warrants from Alameda and Tehama counties. On a positive note, a coalition of healthcare
professionals, educators, and community leaders has formed to address the physician shortage crisis affecting 17 Northern California rural counties. The Rural Northern California Medical Education Consortium aims to establish a medical school between Sacramento and Portland. The region faces critical shortages, with Shasta County's death rates 53% higher than state averages. Leaders from Simpson University, Mercy Medical Center, Shasta Health and Human Services, and medical associations are collaborating on this initiative, requiring $30 to $50 million in startup funding through federal and state grants. Find more local stories by Shasta Lake Town Hall at Town Hall Brief on Linktree.com. From all of us at Town Hall Brief, thanks for listening.
Dina's Cabinet, the local pros who know.
Mandina's Cabinets in Anderson designs custom kitchens, bathrooms, and offices that no big box store can match. They are the local pros who know.
Mandina's Cabinet. The local pros who know. Mandina's Cabinet. The local pros who know.
530-365-8108 or visit mandinascabinets.com.
Hi, this is Carrie Grawl. From the heart behind Organic Pilates, I want to introduce you to Harmony, a lifestyle boutique created for intentional living. We offer apparel, wellness, and everyday pieces designed to support how you move and how you live. Harmony, where movement meets intention. We're located at 1264 California Street. We're in between Curated and Theory Coffee. We can't wait to welcome you in.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center. The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Bottom of it. And you can actually dig the hole into the garden and place that bucket in it. Okay? You're going to leave about 3 inches of the bucket sticking up out of the soil. And then you're going to fill that bucket with soil. Basically, use the soil you dug up and put it in there. We're not looking to add a fancy soil to it. But what this is going to do, it's very important to leave that 3-inch gap there. It's going to keep it contained in that area. It's not going to go through the plastic to send out new plants around it. It's going to keep it contained. That way, the runners will stop spreading and it won't be as aggressive. And then you can just use the plant that's there. And it's going to be easier than finding some bamboo barrier, right? But this is one of the easier ways to contain it. Now, obviously, we've talked about peppermint here. Spearmint is another one out there. But there are so many flavors of mint out there now. There's pineapple, apple, chocolate. There's some orange themed. I mean, it is all over the place. And hey, when Kentucky Derby comes around, you can make a mint julep out of it. Just saying. Maybe it's an idea. It's too early to be thinking about those thoughts. Anyways. That's really wrapping it up about the mint, the peppermint, but just some ideas of some different plants to have out in the garden, and whether it be herbs or perennials, all of these are great additives for you to your garden. Now, the new year, we're already starting to think spring. We've been talking about it. I'd have to mention. This would be a good time to reach out to Natural Alternative to get some information about what you can do this spring. Depending upon what you are, where you are within the country, they have a cool season grass, and then they have cool season lawn program and a warm season fertilizer program. So these are ones that you can actually start to think about now. Maybe it's contacting them, going to their website at natural-alternative.com. and you choose what's right for you. They have always been and will always be one of those companies that when you call, you talk to a human. You're not hitting 17 different numbers to find somebody. You're actually talking to somebody. Funny story, about a year and a half ago, I couldn't find the number that I needed to get a hold of Karen, right? And I called the 800 number. And who picks up? Karen. And I was like, hey, it's Patrick. She's like, oh, hey. She thought I was one of the truck drivers for the company because her and I always go over text or through the cell phone. It was just one of the funnier things. I was like, wow, you do actually pick up the phone. So they're there to help you out. But this would be the time to start thinking about the lawn program that you're going to be doing this upcoming year. And they have their five-step program, their five applications, A1, A2, A3, A4, and A5. Awesome program. You can buy it in a bundle or you can buy it individual, but this would be something to be thinking about for this upcoming spring. How are you going to get started and can you have it right away? And you should want to have it early enough. So thinking spring is going to be able to get you some of those items and say, hey, maybe you don't need it for another month, but you want some information. They're there to help you out. You can always email them as well. Just click on their contact on their website. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. I appreciate everybody for listening. There's a number of new listeners out there, so welcome. We appreciate everybody. We want everybody to feel welcome in the Garden Club. Definitely call us with any questions. That phone number, 339-645-0201. You can also email us. Our email address is paulpgardenclub@gmail.com. Love to hear from you guys, put you on here so we can have some good discussions going forward. That's going to do it. Till next week, be good to each other. Get out there, actually in there, plant something. We'll talk at you guys next week. Have a great one. We'll see you.
I know that hiring can be challenging. You sort through tons of resumes and you get too many so-so applicants. You're just waiting.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a lot to discuss. Man, what a week as we're back in action full time in 2026. Congressman David Kossoff will be with us, Ways and Means Committee, Chairman of the House Knesset Parliamentary Friendship Group, very pro-Israel. We'll talk about that. Also on this weekend, Jason Smith is joining me on Sunday. He's chairman of Ways and Means. We got to get to the bottom of can we finance what the president wants? And that is a $1.5 trillion defense budget. A lot of people say, well, we should be cutting the deficit. But percentage of the GDP, it's about half of what Reagan had. And the president wants his golden dome and golden fleet and needs it financed. Can we find that money? Josh Krashauer standing by on all the breaking news. And we have a lot in the political fray. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
This is 45 years they've been in power. They've never been so significantly weakened politically, economically, which a lot of this is about in terms of the demonstrations, and also militarily. And they are truly back on their heels.
That is true, and that is Jack Keane, who was with me on Fox and Friends an hour ago. Iran's corrupt government teetering as protests spread across the corrupt nation, and Trump warns the Ayatollah, hands off the rioters. Could this regime be heading to the exits and out to Moscow? How that will change the Middle East, I'll explain.
Number two.
I could come up with unemployment or employment numbers that are so good. Fellas hire 2 million people right now. But you can't make our country great that way. That's how you go into trouble. That's how you become Venezuela.
Economy on the mend, on the mind of the president. We digest the new job numbers and plans unveiled to juice the housing in our nation.
Number one.
Nobody wants an American citizen to be killed. This is absolutely a tragedy. It's a tragedy of the making of the far left. They have radicalized a very small segment of the population, taught them that ICE agents are engaging in wide-scale violation of people's rights.
That is J.D. Vance. As no one wants an American citizen killed, he's right. But we find out more about that American citizen that was killed. ICE is under the attack. Why? Left-wing cities and their mayors and governors. Law enforcement told to stay away and not help. Suddenly look at ICE. It's okay to make them the enemy of the people when all they're doing is picking up illegal immigrants. Think about that. Illegal immigrant criminals. People who have overstayed, who are there along the way. And that seems to be the line in the sand for Democratic mayors and governors who are inciting in Portland, inciting in Chicago, inciting in Minneapolis, and just about every other left-wing city. Joining us now is Josh Krasauer, talking about the fallout from Wednesday's shooting. And then last night, there was a shooting over in Portland, Josh.
Yeah, Brian, it's been a very serious tinderbox across Minneapolis, and there's a fear that it could spread, the disruption and chaos could spread to other cities across the country. We're learning more about the Portland, Oregon, shooting. But, no, Minneapolis, I mean, you can see the red-blue divide in stark contrast from J.D. Vance's comments yesterday and the ongoing comments from Governor Walz and Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey. They're miles apart, and this is, you know, we've talked about these issues a lot. This is nothing new, Brian, but it stems from before Trump, when these cities, which declared themselves sanctuary cities, they did not want ICE, they did not want any immigration enforcement in these cities. They protected illegal immigrants long before Trump came into office, and now those policies and the debate over them are coming to a head in an all too tragic way.
And by the way, these guys don't look like illegal immigrants. These guys look like they came from Scandinavia 150 years ago. So we're the legal immigrants. So they're protecting them, and now like typical Democratic cities, telling their kids go to school remote. They just love shutting down schools. Why would you keep a fifth grader out of school because your anti-ICE protests are causing havoc in the streets?
Well, and Brian, Minneapolis was somewhat of an epicenter of a lot of the worst left-wing policies stemming from COVID, from school closures to the George Floyd riots, and how, in fact, Walz and Frey were actually at odds with each other for a long time because of the lack of planning, the lack of security, the lack of in the aftermath of the chaos in Minneapolis, and just the lack of order in the Minneapolis area. So this is a stain on the Walz and Frey records. They don't have a whole lot of political standing to go on. And everyone's pouring fuel into the fire. I think we could use some calmer heads to declare this was a real tragedy, what happened Wednesday, that we need law enforcement, we need immigration enforcement to deal with people who are criminals and are here illegally in the country. But we also need to have some middle ground where you have law enforcement, you have immigration enforcement, and you don't have elected leaders, impugning tragedies and also impugning the people who are trying to enforce the law.
And Josh, we remember guys like James Carville and Axelrod said the worst phrase ever used in politics was defund the police, defund the police. This is similar. This is Target ICE. Who's ICE? Oh, there's this group from a terror group? No. They are Americans who have taken a sector of the community enforcing illegal immigration law, focusing on illegal immigrants, criminals, and millions of which came during an irresponsible previous 4 years. So now it's okay to spend your entire day trying to circumvent law enforcement in our country. And now the embarrassment of Minneapolis cops who are told at risk of losing your job, you better not help. I mean, that's like the Marines not helping the Army.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I've never seen it. I mean, I think, you know, you could go back a generation to see the divide between the federal government and the state officials and the state saying they're not going to help the federal government enforce the law. I mean, this is pretty unprecedented stuff. So that there is a sense of obstructionism when it comes to the Minnesota state government, the Minneapolis government. This is like we've been saying, this is a government that has not shown any degree of competence in dealing with management of the city, with Governor Walz having to not even couldn't run for re-election because of declining popularity and not even handling the welfare fraud scandal in the state competently. So there's an issue of competence here. Like, everyone seems to be wanting to pour flames on the fire and attack the federal government, attack law enforcement and ICE, but there's a middle ground here which the state does not seem to be wanting to take.
All right, so who is this woman that lost her life tragically? Who's this mom of three, including a 6-year-old? So let's take a look. Well, first off, here's what J.D. Vance said, and this got me intrigued. Cut 10.
First of all, the Department of Justice is going to investigate this. The Department of Homeland Security is already investigating this. But the simple fact is, what you see is what you get in this case. You have a woman who is trying to obstruct a legitimate law enforcement operation. Nobody debates that. You have a woman who aimed her car at a law enforcement officer and pressed on the accelerator. Nobody debates that. I can believe that her death is a tragedy while also recognizing that it's a tragedy of her own making and a tragedy of the far left who has marshaled an entire movement, a lunatic fringe, against our law enforcement officers.
I'm not saying by any means that she should have been shot or died or whatever. I mean, let them work that out. You know, they got enough video angles. Let the experts work that out. If you have to lawyer up, you could debate that. I will say that plowing the ground for this to happen has been Pritzker, the mayor, the horrible mayor in Chicago, the horrible mayor, you know, the failed mayor in Minneapolis, and the governor there, as well as what's happening in Portland. But let's find out more about Renee Good. Well, we know that she and her partner were so angry that Trump got elected, they fled to Canada. Then they realized Canada sucks, and they came back to Minneapolis, at which time she signed her 6-year-old to the Southside Family Charter School, which we understand is a woke charter school, which boasts of social justice training for children, at which time she meets like-minded people and becomes a warrior and member of Ice Watch. And she becomes a warrior leader for them, at which time she was all over town and has been doing whatever she can to circumvent ICE. People said they saw her earlier in that day doing these moves, but was trained in anti-ICE activities, what you can do, how to block them, how to circumvent them. This is no poetry writer, no poet from Colorado. I mean, she might like poetry, but her job was being an activist, anti-ICE activist. People should start portraying this accurately.
Yeah, so I think I read that same New York Post story, which was
and the Daily Mail.
Look, there's been a lot. I mean, I'm a big believer in getting the facts out.
And by the way, Fox News confirmed it. By the way, Fox News has confirmed it about an hour ago.
So there's a lot of details coming. I mean, part of the problem I've had in the last couple of days is that government officials are speaking without knowing all of the facts. I think that Fox story, New York Post story, really does add a little bit more detail about the background of the victim, that she was indeed an anti-ICE protester. Now, that doesn't, you know, there's also the fact of the situation on the ground, which I think Tom Homan, the head of ICE, said it best in the immediate aftermath of what happened, which is that we need to have an investigation. I can't comment until all of the facts come out. I think the vice president could have been wise to maybe, you know, bite his tongue a little bit and wait for these investigations to take place, whether the use of force was justified. These are very, you know, this requires a lot of reporting, a lot of attention to detail, and there are a lot of things we don't know right now. So I think, like, cooler heads should prevail when it comes to government officials and politicians. We obviously haven't seen that. But we are learning facts, we are learning details, that you are hearing on the left that this was someone who just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's clearly not the case. This is someone whose background is pretty well documented as an anti-ICE activist and a true believer. Now, that's separate from what actually happened on Wednesday and who was justified and whatnot, but she clearly seemed to be blocking the ICE enforcement operation taking place in Minneapolis, and her background seems to underscore that fact.
All right, let's talk about Venezuela. The president's going to be meeting with oil executives, making it clear, look, we don't want to run that country. We don't want to pay municipalities. We don't want to pick up the garbage. So they're leaving the current government in place for now. They're going to meet with the Democratic opponent that actually won the last election later this week, who won the Nobel Peace Prize. But I think it's also important to point out that I think the president has a very smart move. He's going to use the threat of their one and only commodity, their main commodity, oil, going to control it, mine it, modernize it, allow that country to be rich again. But if anything goes sideways, we are in control of it. That's going to be his approach. But they need American oil companies to commit. I don't know what they're going to say today, but the CEO of the American Energy Institute, Jason Isaac, joined us earlier. Cut 23.
Again, they lost billions of dollars in investments when the regime stole those assets. They stole those leases. They stole private property of shareholders in the United States that are pension fund holders. It's teachers, it's firefighters, it's first responders who had entrusted their investments in these pensions, who then invested in Venezuela to have it stolen. So hopefully we can get that private property back into the shareholders' hands of these companies, and they can actually get a return on investment.
Cut 22.
But I will tell you, the smaller independents that I represent in the Permian Basin, where I'll be later today, are already feeling the pinch of below, $60 barrel of oil. I don't think costs can go down much more at the pump unless you get rid of things like these climate nuisance lawsuits that these companies are having to defend themselves against. Cities like Boulder and states like Louisiana that are attacking our American oil and gas companies, when those should be set at the federal level, not at the state or local level.
And as you think, when Exxon, Chevron, Conoco sit down with the president, they're going to commit to the billions needed to modernize their oil output?
Well, look, it's going to be an important conversation. I think the big concern from the oil executives is, what is the state of governance going to be like in Venezuela? Because right now you still have Maduro's henchman, the former vice president, now leader, Delcy Rodriguez, in charge with a lot of pretty authoritarian and extreme leaders that were part of the Maduro regime. And for the safety of like oil employees to come back into the country, I don't know if the current level of governance is going to be something that they'd be amenable to. I think there are a lot of steps that would need to take place before you see kind of that. And it takes a little, Brian, it takes a while, like to get the oil out of the ground and actually develop the infrastructure and the resources necessary to kind of get that oil into market isn't going to be something that happens overnight. It's going to take years, if not longer. I think the biggest challenge, though, is the state of governance in Venezuela. The assumption immediately after the ouster of Maduro was that there could be a pathway to elections and a democratic regime. We've seen a lot of Machado, the democratic opposition leader. She's meeting with the president apparently in the coming days. So we'll see where that goes. But as long as you have a dictator who's pretty much the same, has the same mentality as Maduro, I don't know how receptive the oil executives are going to be to rushing back in the country until there is.
I think the military presence that will remain, maybe not this level, is going to be the insurance. And knowing that if they lose the oil, they lose all their revenue, it seems to have worked so far. They just have hundreds of political prisoners just let out. And that's encouraging. You know who gets it? Colombia's president, who astonishingly picked up the phone and talked to the president. And we see Brazil now decided to lessen Bolsonaro's prison sentence from 27 to 2 years. That's exactly which, by the way, you can go down, because President Trump said, as long as you put him in prison, we're going to hit you with huge tariffs. So I think somehow they're getting the message. Real quick, do you want to weigh in, Josh, on the jobs numbers? I don't know if you've seen them. They just came in. They added 50,000, slightly less than expected. Unemployment dropped to 4.4%. So the market seems to be happy with that. They're not unhappy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just saw the headlines. It does seem to be a status quo economic report, but we need to see a little more of the data. But look, we're in sort of this weird holding period where, inflation is a little bit higher than we'd like, but not as high as it was during the Biden years. That when you actually look at people's individual economic circumstances, they're actually feeling better than how they feel about the overall state of the economy. So, I think there's a lot of volatility. The affordability message is something Democrats are trying to run with. I mean, the reality is, when you look historically in the last, 20, 30 years, the economy is objectively in better shape than it's been throughout a lot of periods during that time. But people are not feeling it, and I think a lot of that is on Trump's hands over the next year to get that message out, and also to make the sell on the provisions of the Big Beautiful Bill. That this is supposed to fuel economic growth. This is something that the tax cuts and a lot of the permanence of the tax cuts, that's something that needs to be rallied home by Republicans and by the White House if they want to make that sale.
All right, go get them. Thanks so much, Josh. Appreciate it. We're back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Ed Evans, CEO of Consumer Cellular. Maybe you haven't heard about us. We're not one of the big guys. Truth is, we don't want to be. If you're over 50, Big Wireless has you paying for more data than you might need. Why? They might want you to cover the cost of younger people who do use all that data. If you're not using the data, you're probably being used. We've heard time and time again that some Big Wireless customers get stuck paying hundreds and even thousands more for years and years because they think it's hard to switch. Not with us. It takes just about 20 minutes, and you can change your plan anytime without extra charges. We use the same towers as the big guys, so you'll get the same fast nationwide coverage without the big wireless bill.
Our plans start at just $20 a month, and for a limited time, switch and get your second month free. Call 1-888-FREEDOM, visit ConsumerCellular.com, or a store near you and get your second month free today. Plans include $5 credit for auto pay and e-billing. See site for additional details.
At Audion Hearing, our mission is simple, to make better hearing affordable for everyone. We're proud to offer high-quality, rechargeable hearing aids starting at just $98. Clear, comfortable, and ready to use right out of the box. And here's a study worth hearing. Research shows that wearing hearing aids can reduce your risk of dementia by up to 61%. Join over 1 million happy customers and hear the difference today by going to audionhearing.com. That's A-U-D-I-E-N hearing.com.
Hey, I'm Mike Slater. My dad passed away at the age of 63. It's out of nowhere. Had a stroke. Super hard, obviously, for the whole family, but my dad had life insurance. This is why I have life insurance for my family, for my wife and 4 kids. And the best place to get life insurance is ethos.com, because you can do it in 10 minutes. And there's no medical exam and no blood test. Just a few health questions. Get life insurance in 10 minutes so your family is protected. Ethos, E-T-H-O-S, ethos.com/Mike.
I'm Anna Eliopoulos with your Fox True Crime Minute. An Arizona murder being linked to a California tycoon. More than a month after a Navajo County woman was found murdered in her home, authorities say her strange husband, Michael Abadi, is to blame. Abadi is part of a multi-generational farming family in California's Imperial Valley, known for their success in agriculture and leadership in the community. Authorities say they believe the 63-year-old made the trip from California to Arizona on November 20th, shot former beauty queen Carrie Abadi, and returned to the Golden State soon after. At the time, the Abadis were locked into bitter divorce proceedings with financial support at the center of their dispute. Abadi has now been charged with first-degree murder and is being held on a $5.5 million bond. He has pleaded not guilty. There's more on this story at foxnews.com or subscribe to the Fox True Crime Podcast. I'm Anna Eliopoulos with your Fox True Crime Minute.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Jesse Ed Davis, one of the few successful Native American rock artists, was well known as a session guitarist who recorded solo albums, as well as working with a who's who of major artists in the 1970s and 80s. In a 1972 interview, Jesse discussed recording albums in the heyday of AM radio's programming demands.
To have to consider the fact that you're making a commercial product, have to consider the fact that you have to fit in line with the company's image, have to consider the fact that you have to try and get your record played on AM radio, is almost incredible limitation on a person's music. And I really find it very degrading, personally. Do you bend to the way they want you to play, or do you be true to your music, your art? You know, it's so rough.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
This is House Call for Health.
Flu season is here, and doctors are warning parents to keep an eye out for other viruses. Kristen Barrett, a pediatrician with Cleveland Clinic, says parents should be aware of respiratory syncytial virus, also known as RSV. She says it infects the lower respiratory tract, including the lungs and bronchioles, and that RSV is highly contagious, usually spread through respiratory droplets or direct contact with someone who's sick. The virus puts babies and children under age 2 in danger if they're infected. Symptoms include a runny nose, congestion, coughing, sneezing, fever, wheezing, and in severe cases, difficulty breathing. To limit the risk of catching RSV, Barrett suggests parents wash their children's hands, sanitize surfaces, and keep them away from anyone who's sick. Immunizations are also available for babies and certain children. Barrett notes if a child does get sick with RSV, they can typically recover at home. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
To your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, that's very tough rhetoric from a guy who just quit because his fraudulent activities have been uncovered. Look, Tim Walz is a joke. His entire administration has been a joke. The idea that he's some sort of freedom fighter, he's not. He's a guy who has enabled fraud and maybe, in fact, has participated in fraud. That's what this new assistant attorney general position is going to find out. I don't care what Tim Walz says. I care about getting to the bottom of this fraud for the American people, and I care about enforcing the nation's immigration laws. That's what we're going to stay focused on.
That is J.D. Vance, and he's talking about Tim Walz, and Tim Walz is trying to save his career by being a tough guy and for left-wing causes and cursing like Jacob Fry, the horrible mayor from Minneapolis. Really, what are you guys doing in Minnesota? I mean, you gave us Jesse Ventura, who's an absolute clown, and then who is a – I don't care if you're a wrestler. You're supposed to have a previous career before you go into politics. It's great. I mean, that's – we have a candidate over running for governor that founded Crunch and Ben Midgley, and he wants to be the governor of Maine. That's great. That's your experience. Then you leave. So I'm nothing against that, but you gave us Jesse Ventura, totally incompetent, did nothing, was lazy. And now you give us this terrible governor, and you give us this terrible mayor, and what you got in return was massive fraud that should embarrass everybody. And it robbed autistic kids of the schooling they need and hungry families of the food that was set aside for them.
Isn't just in textbooks. It's the story of us, the United States. 2026 marks 250 years of America. And throughout the year, Bill Hemmer takes listeners on a journey through the 250 most impactful moments in American history. From the spark of revolution to the battles for freedom. The ideas, inventions, and decisions that change the world. The 250 most impactful moments in American history podcast. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com.
You never know who might be taking the quiz.
Hi, everyone. It's Candace Cameron Bure.
Hey, everyone. It's Phil Sims.
It's Dolores Catania.
Hey, everyone. I'm Kix Brooks.
It's Candace Bushnell.
I'm Rob Paulson.
I'm Ryan Serhant.
Hey, everyone. I'm Nicole Palizzi.
Hey, everybody. It's Kevin Nealon.
What's up, guys? It's Nia Sue, and it's time to take the quiz.
Five questions in less than 5 minutes every day. Listen and follow at thequiz.fox.
This is House Call for Health, a turning point for a popular weight loss drug, which so far has been used by injection. Now the Novo Nordisk weight loss pill is available, called the Wegovy pill, costing $150 to $300 a month, depending on the dosage. It's available at 70,000 pharmacies in the U.S., including Costco and a few telehealth companies. One senior vice president for marketing and patient solutions at the company writes, "We know there are people interested in addressing their weight, but who've been waiting on the sidelines for a medicine that was right for them. For many of them, that wait is over. The pill is taken once a day with the same active ingredient as the injectable version of Wegovy and Ozempic, and it's meant to be used with a reduced calorie diet and increased physical activity. It's the first oral version approved by the FDA. Novo Nordisk, with a head start in the competitive weight loss market, which is estimated to be worth $100 billion by the year 2030. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health, I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Hello, everyone.
everyone. This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
Neil McDonough portrays Jesus. Stacey Keach, Sean Astin, Michael York, and Kristen Bell provide the voices for some of Jesus' notable followers. A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told, The Life of Jesus.
Make sure to spread the word.
Listen and follow now at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests to hear their take on American life, politics, and entertainment. And don't forget, there's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere.
Listen and follow now at FoxNewsPodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
October 30th, 1974. It was the Rumble in the Jungle. World heavyweight champion George Foreman and former world champion Muhammad Ali entered the ring in Zaire in one of the first Don King promoted boxing matches. Muhammad Ali regained the world title from a younger and stronger Foreman and spoke to the press after the fight.
I had one hell of a Rumble. I had to beat Tarzan behind first for claiming to be the king in the jungle for this fight. I've wrestled with alligators. I've tussled with the whale. I done handcuffed lightning and put thunder in jail. You know I'm bad. I have murdered a rock. I injured a stone and I hospitalized a brick. I'm so bad I make medicine sick. I'm so fast, man, I can run through a hurricane and don't get wet.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
I'm Gianna Gelosi with your Fox True Crime Minute. The socialite convicted of helping her boyfriend cover up the murder of a Connecticut mother of five appeared in court this week in a bid to be released from prison. Michelle Terkonis was sentenced to 20 years behind bars in 2024 after she was convicted of helping Fotis Doulos plot his wife Jennifer's May 2019 killing and then helping him hide the crime after the fact. Jennifer's body was never found. Terkonis' team had argued that her case should be tossed on the grounds that she got bad legal advice from her former lawyer, who allowed Terkonis to talk with police multiple times in 2019. Those statements to investigators were then used against her in trial. Terkonis' new team also claimed she wasn't informed about the fact that her former lawyer also spoke with the prosecutor. The judge will have 120 days to issue a decision on Terkonis' petition to be freed. If he sides with her, her case would be overturned and prosecutors would decide whether to put her on trial again. There's more on the story at FoxNews.com or subscribe to the Fox True Crime Podcast. I'm Gianna Gelosi with your Fox True Crime Minute.
That makes you think.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Release my doodle right now!
Release my doodle right now!
We have kidnapped, the United States kidnapped, the president of a sovereign government!
Say!
Venezuela isn't yours!
Venezuela isn't yours!
Release my doodle!
So that is some of the demonstrations that happened hours after Maduro was taken out of his bed, brought to a base, and then brought to Brooklyn to jail, and then he was quickly into Manhattan and back. So where do these protests go? How did you get a pro-Maduro protest going in a matter of hours in New York City and in other cities? It's really simple. As Azra Q. Nomani talks about on Fox News Digital, there's a series of socialist groups that were able to communicate instantly and respond just like they did with after October 7th and the attack in Israel, just like they did after the George Floyd riots and various causes with Antifa. This is a dangerous network that communicates and organizes quickly. It's all anti-American, pro-socialist. Azra, welcome. Great work. When did you realize that this network was in action?
Well, Brian, it's great to talk to you. So I just started a new job at Fox News Digital as the senior editor investigations. Really important title, right? But trying to be on the job, I was up at 1 a.m. Friday night doing some writing and watching you know, the news and watching social media. And there I saw it then, Brian, just as it was unfolding, 1:35 a.m., an alert goes out from this place called Breakthrough News. And I knew Breakthrough News because I've been reporting on these protest industry for some years now. And they are a social, a propaganda wing of the entire socialist network here in the United States. They had some of the first footage of these explosions in Caracas. And 10 minutes later, one of their chief operatives here in the United States put out a condemnation of the United States about this illegal action, and they were off to the races.
This is People's Forum. That is Manalo de Los Santos.
There you go. Exactly. So Manalo, I've been following him for some years now, and he's of his Dominican Republic heritage. And he has had just a few field trips to Caracas. You had the great guest on just a few minutes ago, you know, Carmen, and she was talking to you about how this socialist revolution came to Venezuela when she was much younger. And it has taken root through Chavez first and then Maduro. And what had happened is that they had built this alliance with these U.S. organizations. And so Manalo was one of those people who has had this great alliance with the communist, socialist, Marxist efforts in Venezuela. And he was on fire.
And they support and spend and organize, help him organize. So he's going to be loyal to them. Less than 2 hours later, the Answer Coalition, a nonprofit co-founded by a proud Marxist, Brian Becker. So you quickly saw that pop up.
Yeah, exactly. And so Brian, who is Brian? He's not a household name to anyone. But if you've been following all of these protests that we've had in America for the last two decades, you're going to see Brian Becker there. Brian is a self-described Marxist. There is no confusion about this. This is not us putting labels on them. They are very proud of their ideology. And Brian has been leading protests first against the Iraq war, and then it just keeps iterating, right? And now he emerged on Friday night, and he had his condemnation. And so what were they doing all night long? As I was up watching them on social media, they were planning. And then finally, by 2:29 a.m., just an hour, you know, less than an hour after the world even knew, they had announced that they were going to have a day of emergency protests for no war on Venezuela.
So no King's protests. These are the same people, the anti-Semitism right. That we see, all these organizations on campuses. So this other guy, you say Royce Singham? And the United States non-states-born technology executive who relocated to Shanghai after selling a software firm and started to work, that critics say is aligned closely with interests of the Chinese Communist Party. His group is the Party for Socialism and Liberation.
Yeah, so Brian, what's so critical here, as you know so too well, is that you got to follow the money. And in this case, where does this network of socialist organizations in the U.S. get their money? They get their money from this tech tycoon who moved to Shanghai. A New York Times expose on him several years ago chronicled him as a propagandist for the Chinese Communist Party. And so Neville Roy Singham has funded this network of organizations, the Answer Coalition, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, and this place called the People's Forum. Everybody sounds innocuous, but it was just as you had talked about earlier. These are all people that are doing the dirty work of this despot named Nicolas Maduro. And what has happened is that they have created this cacophony that is like the myth of the marching millions, so that within hours, it seems like the country is opposed to this action that America has taken. But in fact, it's just this well-oiled machine.
Right. So we think, wow, how did this happen? You're describing in the FoxNews.com column exactly how it happens. This is organized. The next anti-American movement that happens, or Mamdani needs some support, or some Seattle mayor wants something to back up their ridiculous policies. These groups go into action, and a lot of it's financed from outside our borders. I find it unbelievably disturbing. Code Pink is a part of it. That's a dangerous group that popped up trying to harass the Treasury Secretary, got very close to the president at a restaurant recently. This group is also in action and part of this network.
Right. And how it all close to home, because one of the co-founders of Code Pink is married to none other than Neville Roy Singham. So it's all in the family. There, it's a close-knit group, about 20 people in all, Brian. But what they do is they create this image, you know, of the millions going out on the streets. And as you know, it's been really effective, right? It happened after in 2020, after the George Floyd death. It happened after every action that is, you know, infuriating to the people who want to undermine America. And they just exploit this network that is available to them in this country, because they just push a button and those guys are out on the streets.
So right now, do you think that they plan on continuing this? As Maduro is going to sit in prison for months?
Yes, they are going to. They already have it planned. January 20th, Brian, they have a general day of strike planned, and they are calling upon all those working class people to take a day off work.
What day
in
is
order
this?
To what's that?
What day is it?
January 20th.
So they're going to have everybody take off work for a day, a strike.
Right. Exactly, because the working class can afford it, right? And that's the irony of all of this, is that ultimately they are just have the same type of hypocrisy that a lot of people criticize them for, because they are all living, you know, pretty comfortable lives, while, as your guest just spoke about, the people of Venezuela have been facing poverty, right? They have been facing so much economic crisis. And there's no mention, as you said earlier, about the king that has ruled Venezuela for so many years. Instead, they are now out there going free Maduro.
So are they associated with the DSA, Democratic Socialists?
So what's so important in all of this is that the Democratic Socialists of America that, you know, endorse Mamdani for mayor is right there with them. And it is their foot soldiers. The Democratic Socialists of America have, you know, created, I don't know if you know that their symbol is this, you know, beautiful little red flower, right, that they use. So they've made it so attractive to be socialist in America now. And they get the foot soldiers out there. They were out there. And when you look at the entire, I did a spreadsheet of every protest that we had in the country. And these several organizations were behind every single protest. And so the myth of the marching millions is just that.
It's
they're
a myth.
Just creating.
And,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Do you think they're getting paid?
Well, for sure, the executives get paid. You know, you can look in their IRS 990 filings and you see that it's a professional protest executive class that is pulling off these right. demonstrations. The detail that we never can confirm for sure is whether the foot soldiers
right.
get paid, right? But, Brian, it doesn't matter to me, because what matters is that you're not going to get these protests, you're not going to get these actions without this industry behind it providing the logistical support.
Check her out, Asra Nomani. Check out her column on FoxNews.com. Welcome aboard. It was great work, Asra. Thank you so much.
So happy to be part of the Fox family.
Absolutely. When we come back, a simulcast with Stuart Varney on FBN, also part of the Fox family.
My name is Whitney Allen. I am a widow. My husband, Ryan, died. We never thought in a million years we'd have to use life insurance. The unexpected happened. With Ethos, it is so fast and easy. It's 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage through Ethos.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term.
Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
At Audion Hearing, our mission is simple, to make better hearing affordable for everyone. We're proud to offer high-quality, rechargeable hearing aids starting at just $98. Clear, comfortable, and ready to use right out of the box. And here's a study worth hearing. Research shows that wearing hearing aids can reduce your risk of dementia by up to 61%. Join over 1 million happy customers and hear the difference today by going to audionhearing.com. That's audienhearing.com.
I'm Ed Evans, CEO of Consumer Cellular. Maybe you haven't heard about us. We're not one of the big guys. Truth is, we don't want to be. If you're over 50, Big Wireless has you paying for more data than you might need. Why? They might want you to cover the cost of younger people who do use all that data. If you're not using the data, you're probably being used. We've heard time and time again that some Big Wireless customers get stuck paying hundreds and even thousands more for years and years because they think it's hard to switch. Not with us. It takes just about 20 minutes, and you can change your plan anytime without extra charges. We use the same towers as the big guys, so you'll get the same fast nationwide coverage without the big wireless bill.
Our plans start at just $20 a month, and for a limited time, switch and get your second month free. Call 1-888-FREEDOM, visit ConsumerCellular.com, or a store near you and get your second month free today. Plans include $5 credit for auto pay and e-billing. See site for additional details.
Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. So you have collected greeting cards from what seems to be every occasion throughout the year. You feel it's wasteful to toss them, but at the same time, you feel you don't need the clutter. Well, you can always donate them. Many facilities, including schools and daycare centers, could potentially use them for arts and crafts projects and other purposes. Or you can get creative and save money by making placemats out of them or turning them into gift tags. You can make longer cards into bookmarks by punching a small hole in a long rectangular piece of card and adding a ribbon and give them as gifts. And why spend money for note paper when you can use the blank area of the card for notes or use the paper for making lists? Or cut out your favorite scene, say from your Christmas cards, attach a ribbon, and create one-of-a-kind ornaments. Being creative with your greeting cards can perhaps save you some money in the long run. Saving you money, Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
I'm Ashley DeBorkin with a Fox Celebrity Profile with the Masked Singer team, including Jenny McCarthy Wahlberg, who I joined on set to kick off season 14.
What is the Masked Singer magic that gets you to season 14?
That's a great question. I think the secret sauce lies in its uniqueness. There isn't a show like this on television. It still brings families together. The thing that I still hear people on the street say is, oh my God, Jenny, my son gets off of his phone or computer and sits with me to watch the show. It's still a fan favorite amongst kids to grandmas.
She, Robin Thicke, and Ken Jeong spoke about how each season is a family reunion for the panel.
I always heard TV people say, we're like a family. I'm like, shut up, that doesn't happen. Until it happened to me, we have our own, you know, text chain group going on, and we talk when the season's not happening. We truly love each other.
We have this great massive season premiere that is unlike any other. We all got together, boom, fit like a glove. You can't
and then we
teach.
Turn on the premiere energy, we call it.
Ashley DeBorkin, Fox News.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everybody. In a matter of moments, I'm going to go on Stuart Varney, but at the back end, they usually leave some time if you want to get on board, or BrianKilmeade.com if you prefer to write. You're at work and you can't really hop on the phone anymore. You got to actually come to work. You're no longer allowed to commute anymore. But I'll be on with him in just a moment. And then if you want to write me, you go to BrianKilmeade.com, and at which time you can just say, click on comments and you can write me, and I'll get your response. It goes to my email address. So let's listen in. Here's Stuart Varney.
It is precisely 10:51. That means it's Kilmeade time. All right, Brian. Governor Tim Walz's daughter is speaking out after her father dropped his re-election bid in Minnesota. Listen to this.
He was popular during the campaign last fall. Yep. And he's still in office, and he was running again, and so it's just kind of an easy thing for them to pick up on. Mm-hmm. And I think there's enough truth to the fraud claim, like things, that they were able to twist it and amplify it and whatnot, because it is being dealt with. They were just able to frame it in a way.
Come on, let me deal with that again. She admits there's truth to the fraud scandal, but she's still twisting this to make it about Trump. What do you say to that, Brian?
It's all a federal investigation. It's not a local investigation. He didn't discover it 2 years ago and been working on it, now exposed. That would have been an interesting storyline. Still, it's bad. It happened under him. It got exposed. It got brought forward by Nick Shirley, at which time he quickly went to his two fallbacks. Donald Trump's fault and racism, even though it's almost all Somalis, you can't point that out, I guess. Maybe in the 2020 world you couldn't, but in the real world that we're in right now, you can point out the obvious. Number two, I think it's going to get a lot worse. Just logic tells you that, you know, if you feel as though it's been exposed, you got to go out just to explain it, you move on. But if you think the worst is yet to come, you bow out now to retreat from a lot of the controversy.
I think you're going to see this welfare fraud scandal extend to other states. You're already seeing it in Mississippi. It's only a matter of time before other states are investigated. And I think you're right. You've not seen the end of it yet.
I think Ilhan Omar, too. Think about it. She represents the district where all this stuff happened. Either she's the most clueless congresswoman ever. She still has an immigration origin story we can't line up, which is something that you would think if they'll make enough stories about your trip and your journey to become an American citizen, which you have one that's been exposed. If they made stuff up, Stuart, you'd have that microphone. You'd straighten that out in a second. She's on television all the time, but she cannot straighten out her origin story. So we got to get to the bottom of that. And then we got to find out, as Elon Musk tweeted this morning on X, he said that the worst is California. And we're going to find out that, for example, if you want to open up a daycare, all you have to do is say, here's my daycare. Now, can I have my money? Thank you. Now, according to the new rules, you have to prove you actually have kids in the daycare and you'll get reimbursed. A little thing like that.
A little thing like that, proving you got kids in there.
Yeah.
This one's for you, Brian. Hilton just dropped a Minnesota hotel from its system. That hotel had canceled rooms for ICE agents. Hilton says the hotel didn't meet their standards or values. They're now working with all their other franchisees to ensure it doesn't happen again. Okay. Hilton responded very quickly to the situation. Brian, do you think they were pressured?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're going to have the Bud Light situation happen to them. You have a bunch of ICE agents by the tens of thousands who, by the way, have arrested just about 1,000 criminals and grabbed them off the illegal immigrants off the streets of Minnesota in that state. So they want to stay in a hotel, and the Hilton pushes back and they say, check your email. We're rejecting your reservation. Think about that. Trisha McLaughlin of the White House says, really? They said they're fixing it? How come they haven't reached back out to DHS or anybody else and said, we apologize, we're fixing it? She said today, she put up this morning, she said, I wonder how Everspeak Hospitality has moved swiftly to address this matter when DHS, ICE have not heard anything from them. So, I mean, unacceptable to think some management would okay the cancellation of reservations. It's just, it's sickening, too, especially when they're
mess,
just, yep.
The big mess is spreading. Got it. Bill, Brian, thanks for joining us. I'm going to move straight on. I'm short of time. Brian Kilmeade, ahead. Mike.
Absolutely. So that's this ICE thing that happened on the ground. But now ICE is going into all these cities and all these states, and they're not going to be supported by the National Guard. I think it looks like some of these judges in the Supreme Court said you can't do it. But guys like Justice Alito said, are you kidding me? Now it's okay for ICE agents to go out without any local support. So if you have a city run by Mondami, a city run by Governor Pritzker or that terrible mayor of Chicago, who cops will not help an ICE agent. You always had the National Guard to back him up, but now they don't. So we'll see how that goes. Part of the agenda that the president is now speaking at the Kennedy Center to the Republican caucus, this is a crucial day. They're going to lay out a strategy for holding the House and Senate. So the goal for the Republican Party is simple. Do both. And here's how the Freedom Caucus wants to do it. And they put their 7-page paper and gave it to Speaker Johnson. Number one, they want to cut spending. Number two, they want to talk about immigration, illegal immigration on the streets. Number three, they want the Senate to pass the SAFE Act, which is a way to bring election integrity to this, our next election, which is on the midterms. I love it. See, what Republicans are doing than Democrats, they're not saying don't let people vote. They just want to make sure the right people, they want to make sure the American people vote and no foreigners, unregistered people vote. They want to make sure only the legal, every vote is legal and it's counted. It's legal, is counted. So the Senate hasn't really taken that up. I don't know if they're going to get 60. I know they wouldn't. People say pass the filibuster and they'll do it, have voter ID. Yeah, until a Democrat gets elected and they'll flip it right back. So that's the problem with getting rid of the filibuster. And the last one was affordability and housing. You know, what's interesting is that when it comes to the affordability housing thing, that's what Senator Schumer's saying, that by going into Venezuela and taking Maduro and putting him in Brooklyn in prison, you're not addressing the people's needs. So he says, we're going to address all these things. The question is, what are the Democrats going to do except blame Republicans? They're going to throw money at it. We'll give you money in order to put money on down in a house. That's not the way the capitalist system works, but it's the way the Democrats choose to solve problems.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could it be lower testosterone?
Lower T.
Happens to most guys after 40.
I was in the same boat until I started using Nugenix Total T2. Total T2, the new one I've seen on TV.
Yep, it's the next generation testosterone booster for both free and total testosterone. It's packed with even more man-boosting power, sending nitric oxide levels skyrocketing in just 3 hours.
It actually works?
I feel like I'm in my 20s again. I've got more energy, better results in the gym, and things are even better in the bedroom. Send them a text and get a complimentary bottle.
Text now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T2, the number one testosterone brand at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, absolutely free. Text SAVVY to 369-369. That's SAVVY to 369-369. SAVVY to 369-369.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1982. The death of John Belushi.
Our paramedics responded to a home in the Hollywood Hills. After a short time, had to pronounce the victim dead.
I came because I believe that the nuclear arms race has got to end for the sake of the world.
To be a part of the group of people that are supportive of what we are about, namely stopping the nuclear arms race.
Count number one, not guilty by reason of insanity. A look of wonder came to the faces of John Hinckley's parents. That's the count charging him with attempting to kill the President of the United States.
At the conclusion of tonight's game between the Giants and the Packers, all NFL training facilities will be struck.
I'm just very happy the patient is doing as well as he's doing right now.
It's very obvious that these caps were tampered with. It was not an accidental thing. It was not a product defect. It was willful and wanton.
News as it happens then, news as it happens now.
This is Fox News Talk.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Ron Taylor. The U.S. warns Americans to leave Venezuela immediately as armed militias set up roadblocks. Details from Bernie Bennett.
According to the U.S. Embassy in Caracas, a new security alert issued Saturday urges Americans in Venezuela to leave the country immediately, citing security concerns and the U.S. government's inability to provide emergency assistance. The embassy said in a January 10 security alert, quote, U.S. citizens in Venezuela should leave the country immediately. The warning cited reports of armed groups operating on Venezuelan roads. Bernie Bennett in Washington.
There's a new warning for protesters in Iran.
Iran's attorney general is warning that anyone taking part in anti-government protests will be considered an enemy of God, a charge that in Iran is punishable by the death penalty. Despite Iran cutting the nation off from the internet and international telephone calls, short online videos are being shared by activists. They say show protesters chanting against Iran's government in the streets of Tehran. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
President Trump working Friday to secure some $100 billion worth of U.S. investment in kickstarting Venezuela's oil capacity.
And the people of the United States are going to be big beneficiaries because we're going to be extracting, you know, numbers of, in terms of oil, like, you know, few people have ever seen, actually.
Venezuela has the world's largest proven reserves of crude oil, but capacity has been severely diminished over the past 20 years. Authorities have charged a 24-year-old man with murder after six people were killed in a series of related shootings Friday night in northeast Mississippi. Clay County Sheriff Eddie Scott said the victims, some of whom were family members of the suspect, were shot at three separate locations late Friday, one of the victims a seven-year-old child. Authorities identified the suspect as Derica M. Moore. He faces a first-degree murder charge that could be upgraded to capital murder. News and analysis at townhall.com.
Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder, launching a new project, or just looking for that extra edge, your brain is your most valuable asset. Now there's a way to support it every single day, Think Factor. From the makers of Relief Factor, Think Factor is built to help you stay sharp, nurture your memory, boost your attention. It unlocks the mental clarity and precision you need to stay ahead of the game, no matter the challenge. After a couple of weeks of taking Think Factor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And look, the longer you take Think Factor, the better it works. This is not a one-off. You want to take Think Factor regularly. If you're a go-getter who refuses to settle, Think Factor can help you perform at your best and keep your edge. Call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF, or just visit relieffactor.com to order Think Factor. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Your first bottle is just $19.95. Think Factor. Think clearer, perform better daily with Think Factor.
There's been a record-breaking comic book sale.
A rare copy of the comic book that introduced the world to Superman has sold for millions. The comic book copy that was once stolen from the home of actor Nicolas Cage has been sold in a private deal for a record-breaking $15 million. That eclipses the previous record set last November when a copy of Superman No. 1 was sold at an auction for $9.12 million. The Action Comics No. 1 sale was negotiated by Manhattan-based Metropolis Collectibles, Comic Connect. The comic sold for 10 cents when it came out in 1938 and marks the beginning of the superhero genre. I'm Hayep Njwani.
It looked improbable 2 months ago, 2 years ago impossible, but against the odds, it is Miami and Indiana with a date at the college football playoff final. A first-of-its-kind matchup in the second national title game of the expanded playoff era, the Hoosiers stomped Oregon 56-22 Friday night. The Hurricanes beat Mississippi 31-27. More at townhall.com. There are some possible signs of life in a landfill collapse in the Philippines.
Rescuers in the central Philippines say they've detected signs of life following the collapse of a huge mound of garbage at a landfill. At least 4 workers are dead and more than 30 are still missing. 12 workers have been rescued since Thursday's collapse. Amarita Haynor is not as fortunate. She says, "My son is there. They already saw him and he was being retrieved. But his remains are still pinned down." Dozens of rescuers are racing against time to find more survivors. I'm Donna Warder.
Minnesota leaders are urging protesters to remain peaceful as demonstrators converged on a Minneapolis park to protest the fatal shooting of a woman last week. Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara says a protest Friday night turned violent when people threw snow and rocks at officers. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the building? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51. Jefferson,
stay alive. Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew and this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Arturo Fuente, rare pink, happy ending. Extremely limited and rare, this is a perfecto in every sense of the word. A spicy Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, a Dominican binder, and luscious Nicaraguan Dominican filler. Offer up notes of oak, leather, cocoa, and spice. Proceeds from the sale of this cigar benefit breast cancer research. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
News headquarters in New York City. The most approachable radio host in America. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're moving through a very busy day here from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country and heard around the world. And we're about to go overseas and cannot wait to tell you where we're broadcasting from the next time you hear the show. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Colby Covington. He's a professional mixed martial artist, but his roots are in wrestling. And Colby will headline a main event at Real American Freestyle on Fox Nation. They were kind enough to not only advertise on our show, announce on our show. Hulk Hogan came up with this whole idea, and sadly he lost his life. And also we're going to have Seth Krumrick with us. He's a retired Army colonel and vice president of international security firm at Global Guardian. He's going to be with us in a moment. With all the military challenges around the globe, we're witnessing titanic change, and I can honestly say it's to the action and policy of this administration. People thought it would be the exact opposite. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
This is 45 years they've been in power. They've never been so significantly weakened politically, economically, which a lot of this is about in terms of the demonstrations, and also militarily. And they are truly back on their heels.
That is General Jack Keane. He was ebullient this morning talking about what could be changing in real time and how brilliant the military was in their action in Venezuela and the message as it's interpreted by our enemies.
Number two.
I could come up with unemployment or employment numbers that are so good. Fellas hire 2 million people right now. But you can't make our country great that way. That's how you go into trouble. That's how you become Venezuela.
That is true. Economy on President's mind as we digest the new job numbers and plans unveiled to juice the housing market in our nation.
Number one.
Nobody wants an American citizen to be killed. This is absolutely a tragedy. It's a tragedy of the making of the far left. They have radicalized a very small segment of the population, taught them that ICE agents are engaging in wide-scale violation of people's rights.
ICE under attack as the left-wing cities make law enforcement the enemy again on another ICE-related shooting shows over in Portland that these irresponsible Democrats have done nothing but incite their radical base. We have details on the fallout in Minnesota, Portland, and where ICE goes from here. And that is when they hit turbulence, they double and triple down. But let's talk about the world stage. Let's bring in Seth Krumrick. Seth is kind enough to join us, a retired Army colonel. Seth, welcome.
Thank you, Brian. It's great to be here today. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, for people like you and me and like who love foreign policy, for people that do this, there is so much change afoot. Hard to know where to start, but can we begin in Venezuela? I think I have not met a military person that wasn't in awe of the execution. But the message sent in taking Maduro out of his bed with his wife and not staying on the ground, your thoughts about what it means?
So you've hit it right on the head. This is about Venezuela, but it's really about how we message the world. And if I had to frame this current U.S. administration, it's one of decisive action, whether it's a peace deal or whether it's military force. An absolute resolve, the mission to capture Maduro, is a perfect example of us enforcing our laws and our influence globally. And when we negotiate or we deal with other countries, it has to be from a position of strength. And absolute resolve really is that muscle behind our diplomacy that says, look, we're not just threatening, you know, something that might not happen. We mean what we say. So yes, to your point, tactically, the mission was exquisite. Yet Delta Force, JSOC, no one does it better than they do. But really that political will to do it is one of the key indicators and changes with this administration. They were willing to do it. But make no mistake, if you visualize, think of the world map and think of it as like a still pond. We just threw a big strategic rock at Venezuela, and those ripples now are going out across the world, and they have strategic implications with our allies, our adversaries, and our competitors. But for our enemies and competitors around the world, this was a massive wake-up call. I've never seen a single mission have such an impact to everybody. It's completely changing their strategic calculus on how they approach the United States and where they think they're going from here.
But
it was stunning in its ability.
So Colonel, so we know Iraq, the invasion was fantastic, the Thunder Run and everything like that to take out Saddam Hussein. And the reason we do that in Iraq, people were all over Bush 41 for not finishing it off and taking Baghdad. Bush 43 comes in and takes Baghdad. They go, why didn't you do what your dad did? Now everyone wants a Monday morning quarterback. I get it. But one thing we didn't want is we could have planned, no one argues, better for the day after the invasion. So next thing you know, we have to handle paying of municipalities, picking up the trash and taking over the infrastructure. Trump says, no, leave these guys, as evil as they are, let them do it. We're going to have the threat of it, of another attack on the outside, and we're going to use as leverage oil. I mean, I wasn't even thinking this. How do you feel about how this post-invasion, post-taking of Maduro plan is working out?
So there's, to your point, there's been a lot of opinions out there, and primarily from folks such as myself, who has a deep Middle Eastern background as a special forces officer that worked there for decades. But Secretary Rubio said something really interesting recently, that, hey, be really careful about comparing the Middle East and its identity and culture to Latin America and to Venezuela. They're very different. And to your point, that means the approaches can be very different. So I think in this case, I think it's a very interesting and I think it's a very powerful approach of let's try this method because we know it doesn't work. And we have a very good understanding of our neighbors to the south, what they're culturally like, what we think they're willing to accept. And this is, the more practical approach. Let's see President Rodriguez. Let's see if she can keep her interior minister and her defense minister in line. Let's see if she will comply with U.S. directives and then, you know, which equals progress. And what I would tell everybody out there, this is what I tell my clients all the time that work in the region, it's you have to watch for improved social services. Are the law and order functionalities in the interior minister changing to help pick up the garbage, to your point, to run schools and healthcare? Are we seeing the oil program begin to integrate with U.S. companies? Are we seeing discussions on election scheduling? Are we seeing the U.S. easing sanctions? For us, I'll tell you, for national security guys, are we off-ramping those close ties with China, Russia, and Iran, that winding down that was mentioned recently? And also things like yesterday, we saw the prisoner releases. This, it's all progress. But make no mistake, trust has to be earned every single day. Our intelligence community will be deep watching the situation unfold, listening to phone calls, watching action. That's going to help inform the Trump administration on how we drive the next steps and how we engage with President Rodriguez.
We're talking to Seth Krumrich. He's the vice president of Global Guardian, the retired colonel. So, Colonel, a couple of things is pretty clear. The president's going to meet with Maria Machado, who was the one whose party won the last election. And that's good, next week. But I think the CIA probably told him, look, if she comes in here, she doesn't have the military. And if these guys are not going to just go away. There could be end up being a guerrilla situation. We're going to have a presence on the ground. So that's probably what she is going to be told by the president. What would you tell her?
So I think you have to be truthful. Hey, this is why I chose this approach. It's based off of experience. We've learned the hard way of what doesn't work. If we want to be successful and take care of the Venezuelan people, this is the approach that we assess gives us the best chance to be able to shift behavior to, in the long term, help the Venezuelan people, in the long term, get to elections, and in the long term, to Machado, give you the best opportunity to be an influential person in Venezuela. It would be unfair to her to put her in power right now, to your point, and then have everything collapse around her and be total chaos, because then she loses her value to the people, and we can't afford that. And because it's beyond Venezuela, it's Colombia, it's Brazil, it's all of the neighbors, it's the entire Western Hemisphere. Everything the national security strategy outlined.
Right. So you think elections in 6 months, 9 months, a year?
Okay. So this is one of my favorite topics. It has to be conditions based. If we were to come in and put a timeline down and say, you have to hold to this timeline, we're setting ourselves up for failure. I used the botched Afghan withdrawal debacle. We put this, you know, intractable timeline in, and it was a complete disaster. This has to be conditions-based like Gaza. Hey, these things have to be met before we, in phase one, before we go to phase two. We have to have some flexibility. I love the idealistic thoughts on how we can take care of Venezuela, but the reality is we have to be practical and realistic of what's actually achievable. The bottom line is this. If we know what the outcome is, what we want to achieve in the long term of Venezuela, then we do everything else conditions-based to eventually get us to that, like curling. We're sort of moving the rock down the ice to get it exactly where we want to be, and it's going to be subtle steps along the way.
So here's General Jack Keane with me this morning talking about what it's going to be like with the impact and the need for these oil executives to get on board today as they meet with the president. Cut 38.
Well, I think this is about economic recovery of the country, and obviously this was the richest country and most prosperous, you know, 27 years ago before Chavez, prior to Maduro, got his hands on it and crippled the economy. But it's going to take some doing, you know, to rebuild that industry. But it is their major source of revenue. And I think getting started with economic recovery makes a lot of sense because it adds to the stability of the country.
So he wants these oil executives put in like over $50 billion to start modernizing their pipelines and their platforms.
Yeah, look, he's 100% correct. It's sort of the rising tide lifts all boats. If the economy can get turbocharged by updating all of their equipment and production and raise the level of what they're able to do there, then that will directly benefit everyone in Venezuela and, frankly, the Western Hemisphere. But make no mistake, there's a lot of work, as General Keane noted. So in my job every day, I work with oil and gas executives. I have teams in Caracas and in Venezuela that are helping inform me to give them the right advice of when to go in, how we're going to protect them, because we have to get those oil executives in to start the assessment process so they can truly understand how big this is going to be of a project, how long it's going to take, how expensive it's going to be. But we also have to be able to protect them during this time period. So this is an ongoing conversation I'm having like every hour of the
Colonel,
day.
Colonel, what is it like there? I mean, right now, if you were to put in your friends to go work on the Chevron with Chevron, what would you tell them the risk is?
So there, I'll tell you what the risk is and how you mitigate the risk.
Okay.
So the risk is, hey, look, it is uncertain. There's a lot of tense unknowns that are happening there. When I talk to those teams on the ground and our intelligence teams at Global Guardian, this is a period of turbulence and flux between leaderships. We don't know exactly how things are going to go over the next 6 months. But let's say my oil executives had to go in. Here's the beauty of this company was built by Green Berets. We do everything by, with, and through our indigenous counterparts. So we have awesome Venezuelan security teams that are there that we vest and we test to make sure they're above board. They're incredible. My guys show up. We meet them plain side. We're doing executive protection, secure transportation with them the entire time. They're able to get the assessment. So from that particular piece, I can guarantee their safety, and also I can make sure that if anything happens, I can get them out of country. For example, before the sun came up on Saturday, our Venezuelan team already had all the evacuation routes that we needed to get any of our clients or employees or families out of Venezuela. Couldn't go by air, couldn't go by sea, but we had all of the routes out by ground of how we were going to evacuate our clients. So all of that was happening real time. That's how fast we moved. It's incredible. So I can absolutely support those folks coming in, but that's very granular. Until the oil comes up is going to be the danger zone. Until we can get that rising tide to start moving up, there's going to be all those tough pieces we mentioned before, picking up the garbage, educating the kids, all of the things that can make a society either improve or dissolve.
Right.
And that's going to be the piece we have to watch.
No, the thing is they're used to terrible conditions, sadly, because of their leadership and their communism. So now we have Brazil's leader come out and say, hey, you know that 27-year prison sentence for Bolsonaro, which, by the way, word is he really won the election last time, it's now down to two. Remember, that's what President Trump asked. And then that Colombia belligerent, unhinged leader of Colombia, he called while the New York Times was in the Oval Office and said, can we talk? They spoke for an hour, and he's going to come to the White House. Pretty amazing change of attitude.
It's incredible. And again, it goes back to that strategic impact of what this mission did. And you're seeing this across the board in real time. Everyone is changing their calculus. Iran, Colombia, Cuba, even the Greenland discussion, like all of these things are tied together. So when I talk to my clients around the world globally, this mission and the impact of Venezuela is frankly affecting how we're looking at risk in China, Russia, Middle East, Central America. It's incredible. I've never seen another mission like this. Not the UBL raid, not the Saddam Hussein capture. This is really exquisite times.
Right. That's why it's important. It goes real quick. Lastly, I love the fact that the Russians told us not to take that tanker and we took it. I love that message.
There is two, when you're in negotiations, there's two types of militaries. There's a parade military that threatens things, and then there's, call it a potential, you know, military. Then there's a kinetic, a military that actually does things, that's proven. If we've learned anything over the last 20 years, the U.S. does decisive action. Our military is the best, and no one's even close. Mm-hmm. Conversely, we learned that Russia can't even invade across its own border without creating an absolute catastrophe for itself that, frankly, could be an existential threat for its own country. And when you look at now the diplomatic world we live in, we have the upper hand because we are competing and mm-hmm. we're in diplomacy from a position of strength. And if you look at some of the new messages of we're going to raise the military budget by 50%, hey, we're now reinforcing it. As much as that sounds awesome for the Department of War, the diplomats are going to love it even more.
$1.5 trillion from $950 billion, but it's still less percentage than Reagan had. Seth Krumrick, retired Army colonel, vice president, international security firm, a global guardian with a special expertise in the region. Thanks so much, Colonel. Exciting times.
It was my pleasure. Really appreciated talking to you today and your entire audience.
All right. You got it. Back in a moment.
Real talk, real guests, real insight. Where curiosity meets conversation. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could it be lower testosterone?
Lower T.
Happens to most guys after 40.
I was in the same boat until I started using Nugenix Total T2.
Total T2, the new one I've seen on TV.
Yep, it's the next generation testosterone booster for both free and total testosterone. It's packed with even more man-boosting power, sending nitric oxide levels skyrocketing in just 3 hours.
It actually works?
I feel like I'm in my 20s again. I've got more energy, better results in the gym, and things are even better in the bedroom. Send them a text and get a complimentary bottle.
Text now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T2, the number one testosterone brand at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, absolutely free. Text SAVVY to 369-369. That's SAVVY to 369-369. SAVVY to 369-369.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin.
Billy, your gas light's on. We need to stop and fill up.
No way, Jen. Gas around here is too expensive. We can make it a little further.
Billy, listen to your big sister. You don't need to drive all over searching for the lowest gas prices. Do what I do and use Upside.
Upside?
Do you live under a rock, Billy? Upside is the hottest cash back app out there. It's free to download, and you get real cash back for every gallon of gas you buy. I use it all the time, and I've already made around $200.
You can make that kind of cash back just for buying the gas you have to buy anyway?
Yes, I'm looking at the Upside app now, and you can get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank.
Okay, I'm stopping to download Upside and fill up my tank.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. You can cash out anytime, right to your bank, to PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. That's code RAIN5 for up to a $5 cash back bonus.
Fox on Games, your insider's cheat code to gaming.
Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade is breaking away from PlayStation starting on January 22nd, landing on the Xbox Series consoles and Nintendo Switch 2. It debunks the long-running rumor that the remake series would stay exclusive to Sony. The 2020 game praised for its retelling of the story of Cloud Strife.
This is a one-time gig. When it's done, we're done.
And his freedom-fighting friends, Avalanche.
He's my bodyguard and a soldier. Pretty cool, huh?
For the right price.
Against the megacorporation Shinra. And also by changing the ending that many gamers knew from the first 1997 version of the game. For survival game, Karn is proving to be a hit after a free trial. The Game Baker's made game is being noted for its climbing over treacherous terrain in the midst of a storm and its resource-based survival. The simulation allows you to climb anywhere on Mount Tenzin and on release, Mount Kami. Adapt your posture, effort, and balance, and if you're not careful, you will fall. Eamon Dignam, Fox News.
This is Fox on Justice. The trial begins for one of the first police officers to respond to the 2022 school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Adrian Gonzalez is accused of failing to intervene immediately to stop the gunman. A teenage gunman killed 19 fourth graders and two teachers at Robb Elementary School in one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history. Gonzalez, a former Uvalde school police officer, faces 29 counts of child abandonment or endangerment. Nearly 400 officers from state, local, and federal law enforcement agencies responded to the school, but it took 77 minutes from the time authorities got there until a tactical team breached the classroom and killed the shooter. In an active shooter situation, officers are trained to eliminate the threat, but state and federal reviews show officers treated the gunman in a room full of children as a barricaded suspect instead of an active shooter. Gonzalez has pleaded not guilty, and his attorney has said that he tried to save children that day. Brooke Taylor, Fox News.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1995. Mike Tyson.
In the last 3 years, I had the chance to reflect on my life and develop my mind, and I will continue my journey to making myself a better person.
The Federal building on 5th is going to be your main target. You have half of the building collapsed all the way from the roof down.
Very frustrating for firefighters because there are some areas where we're reaching and touching people, but we just can't get to them.
The bombing in Oklahoma City was an attack on innocent children and defenseless citizens. It was an act of cowardice, and it was evil.
I did not, nor to my knowledge, did anyone else in the White House destroy, mishandle, or misappropriate any document in Vincent Foster's office.
The White House has contended that the Clintons were passive investors in Whitewater. The facts are otherwise.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
News as it happens then,
news as it happens now.
This is Fox News Talk.
Listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. Just quick note, on One Nation this Sunday, we got James Blair coming on. Senator Tom Cotton's going to be with us, a whistleblower from Maine. If you talk about fraud, Maine has got it proportionally as big as anybody. But, you know, the numbers might not add up, and guess who's in the middle of it? The Somali community inside Maine, taking billions. It could play a major role. He'll play a major role in the elections. Why? The sitting governor, who oversaw it and looked the other way perhaps, wants to be the next senator for Maine. Could have a hands full anyway. We're also going to have Tommy Lahren going to be coming on and other exciting things. All coming your way on One Nation Sunday at 10 p.m. Back in a moment, we talk a little wrestling with the real American freestyle wrestler Colby Covington, and then we try to squeeze in your calls. There's a press conference going on with the idiot mayor from Minneapolis. We'll bring you some of those highlights, but he is just a clown.
Bye.
Scott. Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Reading. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
Join me, Mark Levin, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. KCNR, your talk radio.
Donald Trump is doing something that's never been done in American history. Now, what Trump is trying to do all at once, he wants to, what I call, reindustrialize America.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
KCNR, your talk radio.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
From his mouth to your It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, everybody. Just a crazy intense time. We just had the ambassador to the United Nations, Michael Waltz, defending our operation that scooped Maduro out of his bed and put him in a Brooklyn jail. And he was just in, he's now in a Manhattan courtroom. And now we have people like Russia, China, and some Central and South American, and Iran, condemning these actions. Brad Meltzer, author of The Viper, a brand new book that's out. Is it out on tomorrow?
Hey, yeah, we're out.
You're out on a Monday.
Well, some bookstores will sell Monday. Barnes & Noble will sell Monday. Amazon will sell Tuesday.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, The Viper is officially.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that, too. But in terms of fast-moving world events, I mean, this is fast-moving. And a guy that you know well, knew well, Briss 41, HW, you're friendly with the family still.
Still.
People are equating it to the Panama operation when they just said Noriega's got to go, and he went. It took 10 days. We lost 23 guys. We needed 25,000 soldiers. But they're equating the two. Do you equate the two?
You know, what I equate, and I think it's the right question, right? Where in history are we right now? Tell me what it is. Are we at Noriega? Are we at Saddam Hussein?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the fear, of course, is if you look historically, you break it, you bought it. And I think the one thing I think, and no politics about it, is, you know, people, listen, if it all goes right, then great.
Yeah.
Hallelujah. That's wonderful. He's clearly a bad guy. He's a bad dude. But this does not usually go well when we go into other countries. And obviously you have, you know, Trump is saying we're going to run Venezuela now. I don't want to run Venezuela. We could barely run America. Like, I don't want to be running another country. That's the opposite of what everyone wanted. Hopefully cooler heads will prevail, because I do not want to be running another country. That has historically been a bad thing for America.
Right. So another thing is, if he wanted to run the country, you don't leave the Interior Secretary, who's been indicted, the Defense Minister, who's been indicted, and the Vice President, who people say is a barracuda. We'll see. Here's Bill Barr. He was there, and he's there again. He was there in 2020 when he actually drew up the indictment. Cut 32.
Yeah, I have a high degree of confidence he'll ultimately be convicted, and all the legal arguments that have been raised really were raised during the prosecution of Noriega, which was a very parallel situation.
Which you also oversaw.
Right. And I think they will be rejected, and I think he will be convicted, and I think he's looking at sentences similar to, if not bigger, than Noriega's sentence. He's committed far more crimes, in my mind, than Noriega did. And Noriega got a 40-year sentence, which was reduced to 30, but then he also served time in France and then later in Panama, where he died.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the conviction. We're going to get a conviction, right? One of my dear friends did the Cali cartel, right? We're good at that. That's not the issue. The issue is what do we do with the country now? That's the issue. Again, I think Barr's exactly right. It's going to be a conviction. But the question is what are we now holding? And that, to me, is the question we all as Americans have to be asking.
And the question is, if you have a country in your backyard that has Iran, Russia, China, Hezbollah, with huge portions of their country where they occupy, Iran was bragging last year, we're in your backyard. So if you go out and you try to get rid of a guy that wouldn't leave even though he lost election 70-30, The ripple effects of maybe having a hemisphere without terrorists in your backyard is certainly attractive.
Listen, that you've just described, the most viral clip that has gone around the internet, and I'm sure you've seen it, I know I've seen it because it's been all over my Instagram feed, is the Jack Ryan clip with John Krasinski from the Tom Clancy show.
In fact, you want to play it? Do you have that clip? Let's listen.
Oh, we got it.
What would you assume is the most major threat on the world stage? Anybody, just call it out. You don't have to raise your hand.
Definitely Russia.
Definitely Russia. That's confident. I like it. Who says Russia? Anybody agree with her? Hands? Okay. Great. Who else?
China.
Stop yelling at me, but China is a good answer. Anybody? Who else? China?
North Korea.
North Korea. Any North Korea takers? And Venezuela? Anybody? No? Oh, yeah. One guy in the back, a little worried about Venezuela. Everybody's cool with Venezuela? No threat? Okay. Let me ask you this. Which one of these places can claim to have the largest oil deposit on the planet? More than Saudi? More than Iran? Wow. Okay. What about things like gold? More than all the mines in Africa combined? The fact is that Venezuela is arguably the single greatest resource of oil and minerals on the planet. So, Why is this country in the midst of one of the greatest humanitarian crises in modern history?
And the end of that clip says it's also the closest place to launch nuclear weapons. And that clip on a fictional property made by a fictional person is the number one thing that's trending around where people are getting their information from. It's fascinating the way the world is working right now.
But there are facts within those statements.
There are, and I've been obsessed with the comments. If you look at the comments of that clip, half the people are like, this is propaganda put into our entertainment to set us up for today. And the other half is, oh, that's absolutely right.
Right.
And it, again, same thing that we see in reality, right, is two sides of America trying to fight their thing. I think, but again, I think historically the other thing that's embedded in that clip is, what do we do now? Mm-hmm. What happens now to Venezuela? And especially as you and I have been talking, there's, you know, now Russia's demanding that, hey, we want him freed. And there's going to be a parlor game going on right now because you can't go into those places and not have Russia and China say, wait a minute, what do we get now?
They got their hands full right now.
Oh, everybody's got their hands full. We got our hands full right now, right? We think there's no victory in bringing this guy back. It doesn't end today. If it ended today, then we win, right? We took the bad guy out. But to me, I think a lot of people elected Trump because they were like, get us out of these active wars. And as someone who spent a lot of time in Dover Air Force Base, a lot of time, you know, dealing with our fallen troops, a lot of time mm-hmm. watching what the results are, it's not today.
But he also got elected to solve problems. And this has been a problem for 25 years.
Yeah, but I also think if this was about solving problems, then don't pardon the other guy who was a drug dealer. If your goal is I'm going to get drug dealers, then don't let go of the other one.
Right.
It's not about a drug dealer to me. This is about another. It's a bigger game, but big games that are played on foreign land when we remove people. Again, Maduro's a bad dude. Make no mistake,
and by the
bad
way,
guy.
Part of the border problem is them. Part of the drug problem is them. Part of the gang problem is them. They're actually working in America, sending money back to Maduro, who is giving China 85% of their oil for a discount. How is China able to sustain itself? Well, part of the reason could be that they get this discounted oil from Russia and they get the discounted oil from Venezuela.
Yeah, no. Listen, no doubt about that. The question is I wonder when you ask the average American, do we want to be running another country? I'll wager good money that the average American, Democrat, Republican, anything in between, says, I don't want to be messing around
yeah.
with foreign soil.
I'm convinced that you could have a foreign policy and a domestic policy.
Oh, and we always will. But we have so far been, again, right here looking at America, and suddenly everyone woke up on Saturday. You and I, you know, we said it before. Going, oh my gosh, this is some action like we haven't seen before.
But we've seen the buildup. They actually said the CIA is on the ground.
Oh no, CIA was the reason we got in is because CIA was in there, right? That's how we found them, because we had a CIA guy that was in there giving us information. So we have people, but we have people everywhere. Name a country.
No, but we said we're moving in and we put 15,000 troops on ships in the area. But I want to talk about the Viper. Tell me about the Viper.
Yeah, the Viper, again, built in reality, a man walks into a funeral home carrying his favorite blue suit. He's got a terminal disease, and this is the suit he wants to be buried in. But here's the thing. If you go into your local bank and you open up a safety deposit box, paperwork gets filed. Government can track it. Same thing, you go to the UPS store and you open up a P.O. box. But if you secretly sew something into the lining of your suit, and you hand that suit to your local mortician, you have the ultimate untraceable hiding spot. And the man then goes back to his hotel room. There's a guy with a gun who says, where is it? He says, I don't know what you're talking about. And the guy shoots him dead. Man's now dead. His suit is in the funeral home. You won't believe what's hidden in that suit or who's about to find it. And that's chapter one of The Viper. And I base it all on obviously something that gets you to turn pages, but it's a thriller, you know, like Tom Clancy, like those books we all love. But it's built in the reality of Dover Air Force Base and our military troops and what goes on in that incredible top secret funeral home that no one gets access to, but I've been lucky enough to have access to.
And something similar to that happened?
Yeah, well, that what I just described to you actually did happen. It was based on reality. I was in a funeral home and saw where they hold all the clothes when people die. If you have no family and you're sick, you pick out what you're going to wear to your funeral. It's a crazy idea. And I said to the mortician opened up the closet that was under padlock, and I was like, what's in there? And he showed me all the clothes, and I was like, that's a great hiding spot. But the things that I built it around, the reality you'll see in there is just as an example, you know, we do a lot with witness protection. And you and I were talking about secrets before we got on the air with your previous guest. And one of the things we forget about is how great we are at keeping secrets in America sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done the secret tunnels below the White House. I've done the hidden labyrinth below the Capitol. I've even done the secret tunnels below Disney World. But there was nothing like trying to dig into witness protection. Because we all know witness protection is a place that had the mob, right? We think of Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
And that's what witness protection was built for, is to hide mobsters so that we can prosecute them in the same way we're prosecuting Maduro right now. You need someone on the inside who's going to testify against them. I promise you that we'll have some Venezuelans that we're going to be hiding in there. And eventually, guess what happened? It worked. So mobsters stopped hiding in witness protection because the mob started to disappear. But crime doesn't stop. Same thing we're going to see now. It never stops. So guess who took their place? Gangs. So gang members then became the number one group in witness protection. Then 9/11 happened. We started chasing terrorists. Terrorists became the number one group hiding in witness protection. You want to know, Brian, who one of the number one groups hiding in witness protection today is? Accountants. Because we live in a world of data. And that's who's hiding there now. And so you will read the Viper. And yes, you'll turn the pages and you'll see Dover. And we can talk more about that. But you will get to see witness protection like you've never seen it before.
Wow. So this, to me, would be perfect for a movie.
You sound like my mom, Aisha Resnamese, would always be like, I'd be like, Mom, it's not going to happen. She's always picking out what she's going to wear to the Oscars. The most moving part to me was watching these morticians at Dover Air Force Base. We all know Dover, even if you don't know it by name. It's where we just saw recently President Trump was there when that flag-covered coffin came, when those service members came home.
Died in Syria.
Exactly. And those morticians there, Dover's a place where it's not just our fallen service members, but it's when the space shuttle exploded, the astronauts, their bodies went to Dover. It's when 9/11 happened, all the Pentagon victims went to Dover. And it's also where all of our spies in Venezuela, anyone that gets hurt, anyone that gets killed there, their bodies are going to Dover too.
Mm-hmm.
And it means Dover's a place filled with secrets. And morticians there will spend 12 hours rewiring someone's jaw, smoothing it over with clay,
mm-hmm.
because a mother says, I want to see my son one last time in his coffin. Rebuilding someone's hand from scratch because they say, I want to hold my son's hand one last time. These are the best of the best of us working on the best of the best of us.
Mm-hmm.
And almost nobody gets in there. I've had unprecedented access. And you'll see when you read The Viper, Dover is just such an incredibly inspiring place. And right now, and this is, I think, important, especially as we talk about Venezuela, if you want to know, since 9/11, we always think about combat deaths for our troops. But do you know that suicide, you are four times more likely in the military since 9/11 to die by suicide than during combat? That means for over 30,000 members of the military, that's as far as they can run. And the reason why we can talk about it is that's the best thing we can do for our troops, is to make sure they know that there are resources out there if they're feeling something like that. And so when, for me personally, and this is just my take on things, when I see something like this in Venezuela, yes, we think immediately of the foreign policy and the domestic policy, but I think of Dover, and I think of when we get involved in these places, Dover starts filling up, and not in a good way, and it starts getting to be a busy place. Right now, Dover has been, thankfully, a pretty quiet place to work,
mm-hmm.
and I'm worried that it won't be soon.
We'll see what happens. It's gotten really quiet since the Joe Biden brilliantly, and I'm being sarcastic, got out of Afghanistan and probably ended his presidency. So this is the third book in a series.
Yeah, but you can start with this one here. In fact, the quote on the front says, the perfect place to meet Zig and Nola. It's, you know, it's like, and one of the heroes of it is a mortician there, my character Zig, who believes if you're a good person, you put good into the world becomes a better place. And I based him on the beliefs of some real morticians who were there, a real Zig, and found a character named Nola, who's like my girl with the dragon tattoo. So if you love those books, you're going to love this one.
Great. So stick around. Brad Meltzer is going to be here. His book is out today. If you know people at Barnes & Noble, you'll get it tomorrow. It's officially out. It's called The Viper, or you can order it and have it delivered to your house, or download the ebook, which I do. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin. Billy, your gas light's on. We need to stop and fill up.
No way, Jen. Gas around here is too expensive. We can make it a little further.
Billy, listen to your big sister. You don't need to drive all over searching for the lowest gas prices. Do what I do and use Upside.
Upside?
Do you live under a rock, Billy? Upside is the hottest cash back app out there. It's free to download, and you get real cash back for every gallon of gas you buy. I use it all the time, and I've already made around $200.
You can make that kind of cash back just for buying the gas you have to buy anyway?
Yes, I'm looking at the Upside app now, and you can get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank.
Okay, I'm stopping to download Upside and fill up my tank. Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. You can cash out anytime, right to your bank, to PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. That's code RAIN5 for up to a $5 cash back bonus.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could it be lower testosterone?
Lower T.
Happens to most guys after 40. I was in the same boat until I started using Nugenix Total T2.
Total T2, the new one I've seen on TV.
Yep, it's the next generation testosterone booster for both free and total testosterone. It's packed with even more man-boosting power, sending nitric oxide levels skyrocketing in just 3 hours.
It actually works?
I feel like I'm in my 20s again. I've got more energy, better results in the gym, and things are even better in the bedroom. Send them a text and get a complimentary bottle.
Text now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T2, the number one testosterone brand at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, absolutely free. Text SAVVY to 369-369. That's SAVVY to 369-369. SAVVY to 369-369.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You never know who might be taking the quiz.
Hi, everyone. It's Candace Cameron Bure.
Hey, everyone. It's Phil Sims.
It's Dolores Catania.
Hey, everyone. I'm Kix Brooks.
It's Candace Bushnell.
I'm Rob Paulson.
I'm Ryan Serhant.
Hey, everyone. I'm Nicole Palizzi.
Hey, everybody's Kevin Nealon.
What's up, guys? It's Nia Sue, and it's time to take the quiz.
Five questions in less than 5 minutes every day. Listen and follow at thequiz.fox.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
I'm Emily Campagno, and I'm taking you inside the Idaho murders. In Moscow, Idaho, a small college town, one case so violent and heartbreaking shocked the nation. Four students were found brutally murdered in their off-campus home, prompting a cross-country search for the cold-blooded killer. The Fox True Crime Podcast presents Inside the Idaho Murders, the evidence, the manhunt, the killer, and the victims.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com. Every weekday, it's your go-to source for staying informed and entertained. The Fox News Primetime Highlights Podcast, offering a curated selection of the most impactful moments of the Ingram Engel, Jesse Waters Primetime, Hannity, and Gutfeld. Listen and follow now so you never miss a moment of the action-packed highlights from these must-watch Fox News Channel shows. Go to foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. America is listening to Fox News. Show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So Brad Meltzer's with us, author of The Viper. We're watching a few different stories. The Viper comes out. You can get it today, but it really officially comes out tomorrow. And Brad, we're following a few stories. Number one, what happened with Maduro's going to be in? He's going to be seen in court shortly. It was a pretty amazing to see him taken out of a Brooklyn prison where Luigi Mangione was and P. Diddy was.
You know, and
brought to a soccer field and then choppered into Manhattan.
And you know where he was choppered from is Stewart, what used to be an Air Force base, but Stewart Airport upstate New York.
Yeah.
And it's where, that's why the hostages came back in Iran back during Reagan era. That's where they were actually brought back when they were freed from Iran. They came there, this little tiny airport that, you know, is now, you couldn't find a cab there if you wanted, in the middle of nowhere. And that's where they brought him to. And I'm like, the fact that he's stepping in the places where the hostages were, like you said, where Diddy was, like, it's an unbelievable story.
Yeah, and with his wife. And he had a bunch of off-ramps. The conversations were, look, Turkey will take you. Moscow will take you. UAE, I think, would have taken him. And now the message is, you didn't take the off-ramp. Now you're going to go the Noriega way, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. Also, Governor Waltz, in about 15 minutes, will officially withdraw from running for a third term as governor, which shows, I think, that the scandal, which is huge, it's already going to be, they say, as much as $9 billion. It's even bigger than that. And he decides, I'm going to withdraw, blaming Trump. How Trump is to blame for $9 billion worth of fraud that dates back to 2018, I'm not sure.
I have. Is he running for president? Is that why he's with?
He's going to run for governor a third time.
Right, right. He was going to
run, and then probably run for president.
And then run for president. I don't know the story. I actually don't know that story very well. What I do know is watching Maduro through the quorum is going to. If you thought that Diddy was a circus, just wait. Like, because we were going through, I mean, even when we were doing, when Noriega happened, and I'm someone who lives in Florida, I have friends who have done a lot of these prosecutions on these high drug cases. They bring a cast of characters like you've never seen. Because the only people who can testify against him who are seeing his craziest stuff. So you can see on the TVs that are in front of us, you see Miami and Miami and Miami, right? It's one, because we have a lot of Venezuelans there, of course. But two is, no one has drug raids like this and a trial like this, like Miami does. And you're going to see, when you do these trials, I called my buddy who prosecuted the Cali cartel and put them away. And the people that you have to interview when you're doing this are, it's going to be a cast of characters.
I like wish that. It was Miami. It's going to be in New York.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be here. Now it's your problem, right? Not my problem.
Member
now.
Of the Blind Sheikh and everybody else that's been prosecuted here, they were going to do KSM here. But in the Viper, what makes you proudest of this book out of everything you've done? What do you walk away and you go, wow, this is what I'm really glad to see unwind in the print?
Yeah, so there's a quote. I love you for asking that. It's such a thoughtful question. There's a quote in the beginning that says, I don't believe in closure. I'm not sure we ever get over anything. And by a very great military writer. And I love the fact that this book proves that sometimes you don't need closure, is overrated.
Yeah.
Love yourself for who you are. Accept your family for who they are. And you know, that's to me how you make America to be the best we can be.
His name is Brad Meltzer. The name of the book is The Viper. Go get it. Brad, great to see you.
Always.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could it be lower testosterone?
Lower T.
Happens to most guys after 40.
I was in the same boat until I started using Nugenix Total T2.
Total T2, the new one I've seen on TV.
Yep, it's the next generation testosterone booster for both free and total testosterone. It's packed with even more man-boosting power, sending nitric oxide levels skyrocketing in just 3 hours.
It actually works?
I feel like I'm in my 20s again. I've got more energy, better results in the gym, and things are even better in the bedroom. Send them a text and get a complimentary bottle.
Text now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T2, the number one testosterone brand at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, absolutely free. Text SAVVY to 369-369. That's SAVVY to 369-369. SAVVY to 369-369.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent.
Attention veterans. Did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Hi, this is Carrie Grell. From the heart behind Organic Pilates, I want to introduce you to Harmony, a lifestyle boutique created for intentional living. We offer apparel, wellness, and everyday pieces designed to support how you move and how you live. Harmony, where movement meets intention. We're located at 1264 California Street. We're in between Curated and Theory Coffee. We can't wait to welcome you in.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.